Okay.
Well, you get started again.
Do you have the same operation? Are you guys?
Master,
would you
ask a question?
Yeah, sure.
Where's that one, Jane?
Karate by yourself.
Right there.
Jan.
Lapin.
Lapin.
Yeah.
Jan Lapin. Thanks.
Okay. Yeah. Let's get started. Master Oliver's arranging our bus tour, so it was an opportunity. You want me to kind of go over with you guys, take a little bit of time on marketing. And one of the things that Jan had mentioned is sometimes we do enough stuff. So there's two things you can do. You can do first thing, if you're not getting from, well, I guess in our example over here where we were trying to get to 300 students, you got to do enough things per month. And a good number that we like to use is 20 things. If you're doing 20 things a month, that should be adequate if each one of them at least brought you one person. We'd like them to bring you two or three people, and then you get a lot more members. But what happens a lot of times is we end up doing one of those things and they become less efficient. So I wanted to spend this time looking at marketing ideas, and it doesn't have to be my ways to make these things more efficient, but to do the 20 things you're doing, but make sure that they all work. For example, birthday parties is a good example. We get pretty good results from birthday parties and enroll. Our target number is 50% of the non-karate kids. I'll make it a little more complicated. The non-karate kids are in our area, because some of you get kids that are, you know, occasionally we'll have a birthday party where the kids are all from, the cousin from New Jersey brings, you know, five family members, and, you know, I can't sign them up very easily.
Explain a little detail for the process to
involve. Sure. And the birthday parties is one thing, but maybe there's other ones that we want to talk about. Who's doing birthday parties? And y'all want kids, I mean, you guys are trying to build your kids' market, right? So, but a lot of them are doing birthday parties. Who's having really good results from them? What are you doing? What are you doing? Yeah, let us know what you're doing.
Okay. Our birthday party is exactly like our first intro.
Okay.
And what we do is we have them come in, we do a first intro with them, and then at the end of the first intro, then we will talk to them, letting them know that we have a birthday party incentive, you know, for anyone who'd like to come back and try the classes. And we get a very, very high rate of people coming in. Problem, of course, is that about 50% of those folks sign up. So if we get half of them to come in, we get about 50% sign up.
So 25% total. Out of 10 people that are candidates that can possibly sign up, five of them will show up for the second lesson, and then 50% of those will sign up.
Yep.
Well, that's not horrible. That's not bad at all.
No, I think I'd be real happy
with
that.
Yeah, she'd be happy with that. A lot.
I'll do it every day or any day.
Okay, right. That's perfectly acceptable. A couple things I'll ask you, and you know, I've got some different ideas. Anybody else with birthday party success that they've had good results? Anybody had bad results and had birthday parties and got like one person or nobody?
You guys.
It happens all the time. It's very, very common. So a lot of times people just don't run birthday parties. Because I wouldn't run them either if I spent my Saturday for 2 hours and had to deal with all that and didn't get any results. I wouldn't run them either. It'd be a bad marketing activity. So the 20 things that you pick should all be productive. And unfortunately, we don't always know. That's the old, who said that first? Was Barnum or Bailey or one of those guys that I know that only 20% of my marketing works. I just don't know which 20% works. You know, and that's kind of a little bit what we have to deal with, but we don't want to quite accept that, and we want to try to get better results. So that's one thing. So a key thing I heard was make it the same as the intro, and then that means that they set up a time for their next appointment, and at least get 50% of them to set the appointment, and then enroll 50% of those. So that'd be a first start. I can share a couple things I'm doing, but before I do, anybody else this
has? That's fine. So you have a group party? And then from there, you set the intros from the group party.
Right.
Okay.
So the big thing is that the 45-minute party is the same as the lesson, the intro lesson. And a couple key things there. How do you get the parents to make sure they stay for that?
We do the intro at the very end. Right?
So okay.
We'll do the birthday party, the cake,
that's where
games, and
right.
such.
So in your case, there's like this block that's the birthday party, and that includes the cake and the games.
Yep.
And they kind of clean up then, and then the parents, during their pickup time, do the intro class.
Yep.
So you tell the parents at the beginning that they have to come back here. And they may not all stay, right?
Yep.
But then they come back here, and their pickup time is the beginning of the intro class,
yep.
Which is how long?
It's about 20 minutes.
Okay. So the parents are only going to wait 20 minutes. They're not going to have to watch you. You know, it's not necessarily an effective party if the parents are sitting there bored watching you get cake and get presents. It's not even for their kid, and, you know, whatever. So this time isn't necessarily so productive. Okay, so that's one thing. Now, in your party, do you try to make this party be also a martial arts lesson too, or is it just pretty much all cake and games and stuff?
The first part of the party?
Yeah, this first part.
Oh, the party part of it has to do with games that are related to martial arts.
So there is some sort of pre-framing here, so that when they get to the intro lesson and they do that, the parents hopefully are going, oh man, that's pretty cool. Right? So that the intro is maybe even more impressive than a regular intro where the kid doesn't know anything. Because you had, what, an hour and a half or an hour, including cake and stuff, maybe 90 minutes,
yep.
To prep them.
Yep.
The whole thing's about an hour and a half.
Yep.
So this was maybe 70 minutes. 70 minutes for that part. They're cleaned up, make sure that they're all prepped, and right around the pickup time, they're back out on the floor, and then you kind of initiate the rest of the class. Good. Good.
So are you saying
it's the educational part for the parents as well?
Right.
So we're talking about character values, we're talking about the different things, but keeping it moving very quickly so the kids are having fun too.
Right. So it's like an intro lesson. Like an intro lesson, exactly. So you're interacting with the parents, interacting with the kids, and hopefully having the kids somehow interact with the parents so that they're connected. Everything's all together. And the parents should be part of that. Okay, good. Now, I don't know if you do this, but we do a very similar thing. We do a check-in. And there's a key thing, a check-in and a check-out. Okay? And when they check in, and I'll expand on that in a second, when they check in, we make sure we have all their information, because, of course, for insurance and liability purposes, we have to have your information. And we actually ask them for the appointment. And you might increase your numbers here. We ask for the appointment here. So we ask for the appointment.
Hey, we have a partial solution.
Okay. So we ask for the appointment on the check-in, and we say, make sure this information is right, and please initial it. Did you want to announce something?
Yeah.
Okay.
Fill this out. And if you have husband, partner, friend, anybody else, come and do it for them as well.
Is this mine?
I think it was his.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
We're going to fax it to him within the next hour. And then that's going to partially solve our problem.
Okay. So this is for our bus ride. Or our bus ride.
Our tour.
Our tour for tomorrow. And you'd be happy to know that the military takes security seriously, so that means we have to share our information with them, right?
Well, not that seriously. They're running cops out there just to...
Yeah.
I kept the minivan.
Well, I was trying to make it act like we were doing it. But so one thing we add on to this is there's a check-in. So we ask for the appointment there. And one thing that's a little different is we say that the party or the 30 days of free class or whatever we're offering to them for karate is or week free, whatever you want to offer them is a gift from the birthday kid. Kind of like the goodie bag. So they get a goodie bag at parties. We were making fun of the goodie bags. Apparently, there's a new phenomena that at weddings you get a goodie bag.
Yeah.
Has anybody heard this?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's
really?
Latin fans have been doing that for years.
Exactly.
Oh, maybe that's why I never... I've been to a lot of weddings, not all of them my own, so, not a joke. But anyway, the kids get a goodie bag.
It was good that you got to that before we got a chance.
Yeah, I know. I tried to cover it early.
Yeah.
I just number the marriages. Anyway. So
you just name them, like number one, number two, number three.
Yeah, code. It's all in code, because I don't want to say the names. All right. But the kids get the goodie bag, and this is kind of like part of the goodie bag. Now, it'd be okay in the goodie bag to put your pass and stuff in, but the people that do birthday parties and they have 30 kids, And we started being more careful about this because you can get 30 or 40 kids at a birthday party. You know, we get really good results, and we used to have passes out to them, and, you know, nobody would show up. And the main reason they show up is they're not doing what he's doing, which is you do this party, the parents don't show up, they don't really pay attention, they show up to pick their kids up after the cake's been given, and the kids are all going kind of nuts, and then there happens to be a little pass in the bag. And the kids just look at the goodie bag and they, you know, toss it. It's not like the parents inspect that goodie bag. So we make the check-in. We say, Johnny gets a free week of karate lessons as a gift from Billy, the birthday boy. And most of the parents are setting up their time for their lesson at 5 or 7 on Monday. Which one's better for you? And then we just use normal appointment setting skills. So usually we'll get 30% to 40% of the people to set an appointment here. And then when they exit, we also ask them for the appointment, and we'll get another 30 to 40%. When I've personally done the parties, we've gotten appointments from everybody. Now, they don't all show, and so the numbers are probably around what you're getting, you know, in terms of show rates. Maybe a little bit higher, because we're getting generally about 80% of the roll. But I still would be happy with 50-50. I'd like to get a little bit better. The other thing we're doing is doing a pre-call. Because one of the problems is, and I don't know if you guys are doing this, but do you make sure that all the parents are showing up for every kid? How do you do that?
They have to sign them out.
How do they know, though, that they have to sign them in? Like, what happens if I bring my kid for the birthday and I bring five of his buddies?
We call.
Okay, perfect. So you're doing the same thing. So there's a call prior to the party to let them know, you know, lots of good information, where the party is, what they should wear. We actually ask them for the appointment at that time. We say, you also get a free week of karate classes as a gift from the birthday kid. And most of the parents are setting up their time Monday at 5 or 7. Which one's better for you? And occasionally they'll even set an appointment prior to the party when we do this pre-call. And that's nice because then they've already signed up and they're wearing a uniform at the party.
I don't know if you were addressed or not, but that all implies that you've got an attendee list.
Yes, there you go. So going back even one step further is when they sign up for the birthday party back here, we tell them that they need to give us a guest roster. And the guest roster has everybody's name and address and email and all their information. And we'd like to send them an email as well. Very nice emails. It's not really hard selling them if you're calling them and telling them, you know, that here's where the party is. We'll make sure you have a great time. Here's the instructions. Here's the directions. By the way, it's very important that every parent personally brings their kid in so that they can check in for safety and liability purposes. And if sometimes they'll say, well, yeah, but I wasn't going to be able to make it. My, you know, so-and-so was going to bring my kid. Is that okay? Well, actually, then we'd like to have you come in before the party. We try to resolve that issue prior to the party. Is that similar to what you guys are doing?
Yeah.
Anything to add on to that?
Well, I'll tell you, one of the things that we had an issue with in the beginning was we didn't get a lot of the parents to commit. You say you were getting, you know, 30% before, 30 or 40% after.
Mm-hmm.
We had a hard time getting parents to commit. So we ended up, and this works amazingly well, we have the kids go and get their parents and bring them over to a little group meeting there that we have, and then we talk to them all about it. And the key is to get one person to commit, and then the others will do it.
Okay. Well, do you think at the check-in, if you ask them for the appointment, and some of them are already committed?
Sure.
Now, when you do the group thing and say, "Oh, and he's already set his time for Monday at 5, so we can't do Monday at 5, but I can do Monday, whatever you're going to do to bring him in for the next lesson." So now you've already pre-done it in a quiet way, so nobody feels pressure. But now automatically everybody's going to get the pressure. Later when you do your meeting, the social proof that it's okay to do it safe.
We found if we didn't put pressure on them, it wasn't successful.
Okay.
What did you say?
He said if you didn't put pressure on them, it wasn't successful. Like, for example, if you said, the worst thing that somebody said, this is what I hear a lot. I say, well, how'd your birthday party go? And they say, well, I did everything you told me. I said, okay, well, you did the pre-calls. Yeah, we did the pre-calls. And we asked for the appointment. They said, yeah, we asked for the appointment. And then when I find out the way they asked for the appointment was really soft. Like, you know, they didn't say it was a gift from Johnny. That gives them a little pressure to use it. Right, if it's part of your birthday party person, that implies they paid for that. They paid for the party for you to come to, and one of the things you got was the karate lessons. So if you don't use it, then you're kind of blowing off the birthday kid that provided the party for you. We don't tell them that. We don't say you're blowing off the birthday kid, of course. But, you know, we make sure that that's part of it. This was something that we provided, which it was, because we tell them when we get the guest roster back here. We have a procedure sheet that we just have them check off, and it tells them lots of things. If you guys want that, you can email me for it. But it tells them lots of things that are, for example, if this instructor is scheduled for your party, if we change instructors, we may have to do that at the last minute, so you're still going to have the party. If you change anything at the time of the party, please do it in writing, and you have to let us know so much in advance. All that stuff like a little contract. And in there it says, we're also going to give all your friends 2 weeks free of karate lessons or whatever. And we tell them that ahead of time because we're solving problems that we've had. For example, I get a call on a Sunday from a parent who, I don't know how they got my cell number. One of my guys was supposed to teach a birthday party. I have no idea how somehow this guy got the phone company to give my cell number, right? There's no way he could have possibly gotten this number in any way I can imagine. Somehow he did. He calls me on a Sunday and say, hey, your guy didn't show up. We're here with 30 kids for a birthday party. Well, my guy, and I believe him, maybe I shouldn't believe the instructor, but I do believe in this case that the guy had scheduled a party for a Sunday like at noon. We knew about it. We all knew about it. And they showed up that they told everybody 2 o'clock. Mm. And we didn't have it in writing at that time. So it really upset this person. So now we have it all in writing, and we say exactly what has to happen, and we say all this stuff. So,
what's your email address, sir?
My email address is srsenior.master.moody, M-O-O-D-Y, at karatebuilt.com.
Could you say that
karate
again?
Built. Karatebuilt, B-U-I-L-T, .com.
Could you repeat that whole thing?
Sure. Let me just write.
How are we coming on our list?
It's over here.
Oh, good. Almost.
Okay. So, anyway, that helps a lot. So in that pre-stage, we're getting a list, we're calling them ahead of time and giving them all the information, making sure, a key point there is the big line that for safety and liability purposes, we need to make sure that you bring your child to the party so that you can check them in. That way, they know ahead of time. And if for some reason they show up and they don't have the parent, what do you do if they, you guys are talking. What do you guys do if they show up and the parent isn't there? Do you let the kid take the class?
We call the parents and say,
right.
Hey, so I just want to let you know so-and-so is having a great time.
You're a bad parent. You're a bad parent because you didn't come in with your kid and sign in.
That's not on the script.
Yeah, oh, sorry. I just think that.
I don't know the whole script.
So you call them, though. You call them, and then if they do, what do you tell them?
You know,
we just tell, them, you know, if they don't come, they say, oh, just wanted to let you know that Johnny's having a great time in class. It would be really nice if you get here to see him at the last part of his class.
I can't make it. I'm in Tahiti.
Well, that's okay. What we can do is we can set it up a time. We can come in and try a class on us with no charge to you. So when you get back, we can do that.
Okay. That's pretty good. I would also add the other thing that, and by the way, we need to have you come in and sign our safety waiver for his safety purposes. Because that's a reason they have to come in. Now, it's already too late, right? I mean, you'd like to have that be a prerequisite for them to be able to come in, but I would still try to throw that out there. And then, you know, if you get them in, then at least you got them in, you can have a conversation with them. Because that's the biggest problem. That was always the biggest problem with birthday parties before we solved that, and you're solving it well, too, is you get the roster and you call them ahead of time, make sure that they know what's going on so that they're there.
Okay?
And then the other thing is he's not trying to sell them a program at that time. He's using that as intro number one, and then he's following up to do the sale later. Right, you'll do the sale the next time.
Set the appointment. You set the appointment on the phone or get them to come in and sign the paper?
So we're trying to do the pre-call to set the appointment, and we'll get 10% or so. We don't get a lot of them because I just want to let them know. And if they say, oh, I don't have time, I don't know my schedule, oh, that's okay. We'll figure it out when you come in. So I've told them when they come in, we're going to figure it out. And then when they come in, we ask them for the appointment. We'll usually get, I'm probably low on that, maybe more do it. And then after the party, we'll get a very high rate of enrollment. So I like what he's doing, having the little group thing, and going, we're all going to do set the time, and he's already set the time, and you've already set the time to come in, and now the rest of you need to. Right, kids? You want your parents to do it, or they're lousy parents, right? No, just that last part. Don't include that.
Are you recording?
Yeah.
Okay.
You ever run into the issue where it's like, okay, they just, all the kids will show up with the birthday kid?
Well, yeah, what happens a lot of times,
the first time,
yeah,
they just all showed
the birthday
up. Oh, we'll ride with Johnny, and here comes the van, it's like,
right. See, that's why we have
or the parents.
Yeah, that's why we have that contract at the beginning with the parent, so they know that all the parents have to do it. They know that we're going to do pre-calls. They know we're going to essentially pitch the kids, but it's going to be a gift from them. And they usually they go, oh, that's awesome. And then we also tell them whatever referral, if any of the kids enroll, then you get the referral rewards. We give them $100 pro shop credit or whatever we're running. Like right now we're running a different promotion. So whatever referral program thingy we're doing, we make it a big deal to the mom. And sometimes, you know, that works great, but most of the time they don't worry about it. But occasionally you got a mom that's like, you know, going nuts trying to get the kid to enroll because they want the reward. So we always include those things, even, you know, like we said, do they always work? No. But if you do this consistently, I think just like he's doing, you'll get at least 50% of them to set the appointment and 50% of them to enroll, maybe more if we add those other things. Yes, ma'am.
Sir, we have the challenge that our school corporation, the last 2 or 3 years, I'd say at least that long, they will not give out the address and phone number of the children, and the mother doesn't know it. The mother of a birthday
we have that problem
party, and so they'll just invite their whole class. Maybe we'll get 6 to 8 addresses and phone numbers, but that's all we'll have. Maybe we'll have 25 or 30 at the birthday party.
Yeah, that can be a problem. On the other hand, there's some schools that publish a school directory that have all the kids' phone numbers and stuff, and then they ask us to advertise it. So there's some that's the case and some that's not. Yes, sir.
I think that in that we had that issue too. And the way we solved the problem was we just said to mom and dad, I said, look, you know, I'm sorry, but we really need to have that information. And because we send them their invitations out in the mail,
right,
and
that's another step you can add there. And the invitations in the mail is a great way to do it.
Yep.
And I do the same thing, but if they don't have it, they don't have it.
Now, do you do the party if they won't give you the roster?
Nope.
See that? See, that's the answer to most of the questions. In fact, that's what you and I were talking about, because you were doing like 3 parties a weekend. And so if she only did 1 party a weekend, number one, it'd be less brain damage. But number two, you'd have one party with a good set of prospects and you just say, and maybe the party's a little smaller because they don't invite their whole class. Now, another thing you could do that adds, I could keep adding stuff free that we've been playing with. One thing we've been doing lately is we'll always do a show and tell at their class for the kid that's the birthday kid prior to the party, and then we motivate the kids and tell them when the party is, give another invitation. And but we'd still tell the mom, you got to have all the names and numbers and all that stuff.
What do you do at the show and tell?
Yeah. Oh, I got to put my name too? Mm-hmm. Okay. So what do we do at the show and tell? I'm trying to write and do this at the same time.
Well, you're back to what you were saying about the classroom. See, you can pass out a form to all the kids in the classroom that requires an RSVP, right? And so then the invitations she hands out at the classroom can include kid's name, address, phone number, email address, and just tell her in that case, that's what we've done, is just have Joey take it to class, and you know on there it says, you know, can they RSVP back in 48 hours so he can get it back from the kids, and they give us that and we'll mail actual invitations.
So then you get the address. If they RSVP back, then you can get the address and the information.
Well, it'll be on the form.
Yeah.
It'll be on the form that they'll bring back.
See, our teachers aren't allowed to do that.
The teachers?
Yeah, they are. See,
not in Indiana, sir.
Well, here's
I
what
mean, not
I
not in Indiana right. County.
Here's what I find almost universally.
Okay.
The teacher's not allowed to give you the information. The parent can give you anything they want. Right?
Okay.
So if you're not asking the classroom teacher to touch it, be involved with it, know anything about it,
okay,
deal with it at all, right? And so what you can do is you can have them RSVP online if you wanted to. You can do a little web form, or they can just turn the form back, but don't turn it back to the teacher, right? Just have it give it back to Billy.
I like
right?
that online.
Yeah. Right. And see, again, Canada is worse than the U.S. on this stuff. But
I've never encountered some place where the school system, the teacher, whatever, is prohibited from giving you contact information, where the parent of the kid can't give you that information, right?
Right.
And you're not asking, the school's not sanctioning the birthday party, the school's not involved, the teacher isn't involved. You can let the teacher know there is one if they want to know. Mostly they don't care. But all you're doing is the kid is giving it to his friends in class, and then on the form it says, give it back to Billy in 2 days if you're going to be able to make it, and then we'll send you all the rest of the information.
And I want to extend that to any school-related things, because a lot of times we go to the school and then they say, oh, maybe the principal even says, oh, we're not allowed to blah, blah, blah. And part one is there's probably a way around that that is acceptable like this. But the other part is the next school might be fine with that, or the teacher in that school might be fine with that. They just don't know any better. And in very many cases, I'll tell the story that his mom actually was involved with. She is fantastic at getting flyers in schools, right? He told me he got, this was like 10 years ago, right? He told me he got 300,000 color flyers to support the charity that she's involved with.
And it's 16-page newsprint magazines.
Yeah, and if you paid $49, all the money would go to the charity, and then his karate schools would teach the classes. So I thought, oh, that's great. And he said, well, hey, have my mom do it. She wants to do it because she wants to support the charity. I'm like, great. So his mom, wonderful, nice lady, she and I are on the phone, and she says, okay, I'm going to take care of it for all of Phoenix. And she spent so much time on this. She finally calls me back, and she was almost in tears, and she's like, oh, I tried. These districts are the worst I've ever dealt with in my whole life. And she had gotten flyers in Colorado and Tennessee, three or four other places. So she, I think we could consider, would be an expert at this stuff. And they never let us in. Okay, so that happened. That was kind of, I thought, the end of the story. So I kind of gave up on those districts, in particular one district named the Kyrene District, where my kid goes. I kind of gave up for a while. And then I decided, I'm going to try again. So I went to the school board, and they sent me to this lady, and I talked to the lady, and she goes, oh, no, our rules are fine. You can put the flyers out. You just have to have this little disclaimer at the bottom. Now, everybody that his mom talked to told him, no way, absolutely not, it's impossible. So, and then I asked the lady, I said, well, what about doing an after-school program in the classes? And she said, oh, talk to this lady. We got an after-school program. And then I said, what about doing like a bullying prevention thing at your school? And they said, oh, the principals can decide on their own. All these principals told us, it's district policy, we can't do anything. So I think the answer is, on all of these things, there's a way around it. There's a way to use the PTO. The other option is the PTO often can hand out flyers when the principals won't, and all kinds of stuff. And we've had, and I think based on this experience with his mom, we've had probably the worst district. So I don't think, I'm pretty confident if you say, oh, my district's worse, it's not, because we have pretty good evidence that it's pretty bad.
Well,
so.
To add to that, has anybody here done any stuff with the Boy Scouts of America? You've done demos and classes and stuff?
Yeah, we're not.
Their national charter specifically prohibits them from doing, I think it's four activities. One of them is martial arts, the other one is boxing, the other one is motorcycles, and there's something
they
else.
They can do judo, though.
They
can do judo, and they can do something else, but not.
They can do Tai Chi.
Tai Chi.
There you go.
That's
but,
right.
But in the national.
I've seen him do judo. I've been scared of judo. I don't know why they'd say you could not do judo. Or you could do judo or not.
Is he dangerous?
Chief Master Mitten is the most dangerous person I've ever met. Okay. I'm sorry. I don't mean for you to prove it. Don't go trying to prove it.
He's old.
When you make that statement, is that a good statement or is that a bad statement?
It's a good statement. It's something that beats me up.
Is that kind of like my Jeff Smith comments? Dangerous AARP member, okay. But
he's an old man.
But when it comes to dealing with the schools, you have to remember you're dealing with mostly a bunch of perfunctory bureaucrats. Right? And I don't mean to criticize teachers and so forth. But that's just the way their mind works, right? And usually when you hear something like that the policy is, they just don't want to mess with it. Right? They just don't want to do anything, and it's a good disclaimer to get you to
it's
go away.
It's easier to not mess with it than it is for them to have to deal with it.
Okay, that
I got to go fax this back. Yeah.
That disclaimer situation just happened to us about 6 weeks ago, since the last meeting here, mm-hmm. or with
that they couldn't give the hand
well,
out the permission.
Well, they weren't. We were doing that Tiger Open House for the young children, and they wouldn't pass it out. But when you talk to the right person, we could pass it out. We just had to put a disclaimer on every one of them.
Right. We just now go in with the disclaimer already done. We don't even ask the school. We just put the disclaimer on the bottom and say it's something like, in our case, the something district has nothing to do with these guys, and it's
not
for information purposes or some. I don't know. I have it on there. I just automatically put it on there.
Yeah.
I've been taking the record from school. They have a ring bell. They take a picture. They ask you where you come in. There's a policeman to meet you. And he takes you. Then you have to have the permission from the school corporation. Thing signed out. Then you can give them the campus and then put them down for you.
Yeah, we also, in terms of the school stuff, we also background and fingerprint all of our guys. And we use a more stringent policy than the schools do, although sometimes they want us to do it with their people too. But I always start that out with a meeting with the principal. Is, by the way, all of our guys are background checked and fingerprinted, make sure they're okay. And, you know, I like that because then if your karate school goes in there next week and they might want to do something, my guy might, hey, are you guys background checked and fingerprinted? Maybe not. You know, right? So it kind of helps us. And not just other martial arts schools that I'm worried about. I'm worried about other activities and things that they might have. Because really our competition isn't each other as much as it is the chess club and the dance club and all the other crap that they're going to do, right? I mean, in reality, for the kids market. For the adult market, it's the same thing. Our competition isn't other martial arts. The competition is like health clubs and movies and the other things they're going to do. So, so birthday parties. So, you ask what we do in the show and tell, so that's relevant. How do you make the show and tells effective? It's the same as for the birthday parties. If you do a show and tell prior to the birthday party, it warms up the class, it gets them ready to go, and we can give them the invitation. You've already mailed them the invitation, of course, if you can. We don't always get the opportunity to get enough notice to get the invitations out. We will do a party as long as we have a roster. But if they don't give us a roster, we won't do the party. And you got to stand firm with that. Now, is the roster always perfect? No. But we at least get their phone number.
And so, can we talk about that for a second? Because that's the thing I'm having a problem. I would have a problem saying no to someone when I've already, especially we give out a lot of free birthday parties, like as a raffle or to a charity or to a church. So they get this free birthday and they're all excited. And we say we want a roster. And they go to the school to the teacher and she doesn't give it to them. So they say, well, I don't know any of the kids in my child's classroom, but I'll give you, you know, the three cousins that are going from
Exactly. But I think Master Oliver solved that for you. Is they can hand out something to say, we invite you to the party.
Do the RSVP.
Yeah, we invite you to the party. We need you to RSVP. And I would put in there for safety and liability purposes, you know, make sure you let the parent know. And if you use that line, that's a line, a very universal line you've got to use for many, many things. Whenever you're trying to get parents there or make people do stuff, for safety and liability, well, why do I have to buy this special kind of sparring gear? Can't I go to eBay and buy stuff? Well, for safety and liability purposes, we need to make sure it's the right gear. I mean, you guys got to sell the right uniforms. Can't I just go down to the other school and buy the stuff? Well, we don't know the quality of that, and especially, like, for you uniforms, you're grabbing them, right? I mean, if you use, like, one of our Taekwondo uniforms, you rip the crap out of them the first day, right? Right? I mean, it'd be ridiculous. But you might have somebody actually come. Have you ever had somebody come in with a Taekwondo uniform or one of those? And you should just rip it off of them. Just right there. Just right there. Just rip it off of them. Say, come here. Yeah, they'll kill them. Hey, anything else to add on the birthday parties there? Did that sound pretty good?
Yeah, I think it works. I like that they do them. And they seem to think that it's very beneficial. They do that, and they do the honor parties.
They do the what?
Honor parties
as
well. Say more about that.
The honor parties are the same as the birthday party, except every month we take the top 20 kids who get the most character marks in their classes, and then we honor them at the graduation. We give the top person trophies, and all the other guys get medals as an honor student. And then we invite all of them to honor parties with their friends.
And you do that at different times, or you have one honor party a month?
No, we have every other month because we have graduations every other
month. Oh, I see.
And so what we do, we'll do actually three honor parties in one day.
Three different individuals or three parties just to cover all the
people? Three parties to cover all the people.
Okay, I like that idea. So 1 month you'd have a graduation, the next month you'd have an honor party, and you stock the honor party essentially with kids that you're rewarding in your school. How many kids typically? Is it all the kids or is it just the top 20?
The top 20 kids get to bring their friends to the honor party.
Don't you get a lot of times where the top 20 kids are the same top 20 kids every month?
But there's a way to get around that, right? Because we had that issue and it was like, oh man, same kids all the time, right? So what we did is we made it harder. The higher ranks that they go, it gets harder for them to win.
Oh, I see.
So because it's more responsibility for them.
Mm-hmm.
So the responsibility to obtain that gets harder and harder and harder as they get up. And so the people who almost always win are your white sashes, your white belts.
Okay.
And the yellow.
Okay.
And that makes them feel special.
It makes them feel special, and we continuously get new people.
Okay.
How do you get them to bring their friends? Because we have a lot of parties and things, and especially my green belts and above, they just don't bring their friends.
We call them. We call each person individually to invite them.
The person that's doing the party or the person that they're friends?
The person that's doing the party. So we get a list of their friends from them, and then we actually physically call every single one.
In doing the party, doing that honor party, we also do, we just call it pizza party. I like the idea of honor party better, because now it gives you an excuse for giving that out. We come up with different excuses. Maybe they just want it in a raffle, and they get a pizza party. And then to do that once a month, a lot of people are having some pretty good success with that.
Yep.
That way it limits how many of these you got to do. It's less scheduling pressure, and you don't have to make your staff do as many. I'd rather have one party with 100 kids than have... maybe not 100, but you know, one party with 50, then I'd have four parties with 10. That's a lot better.
Well, and if you do them all in one day, it's not like they take every single weekend.
Right. Yeah, I like that a lot. All right. Anything else on the birthday parties or show and tells? Anybody wants to add? So you could use this, I mean, a lot of you guys are in the adult market, you can use very similar things. The show and tells are going to places. And one of the principles is to make sure when you do an activity, an external event, that there's a reason for them to come back. In the birthday party case, it's the birthday party. But if you do a show and tell, we get asked to do show and tells, a lot of times people don't get results from that. But if you do an event or an activity, there needs to be a reason for them to come back in a very short amount of time. We try to do that within 48 hours.
I don't understand where the show and tells are happening on.
Where they're happening, like at schools?
Well, I just didn't basically get what show and tell means.
Okay. Show and tell, like when you're a kid, is you're going to...
So is this what's happening at their school?
At their school.
At their elementary
school? I'll come to your kid's school, and I'll do a class with the kids, and I'll do something with them, and then I'll hand out stuff to them. And the stuff, you know, it used to be, in the old days, we just hand out flyers or whatever, and then maybe a kid would show up every once in a blue moon. Okay. And so what we do is a couple things. One is we try to have an event within 48 hours. Not longer than that, because if you go longer than that, it doesn't work as well. And we've even had some better success if we do two in a week. So if we can get to talk to the teacher about them, then we'll do one on Monday and one on Thursday, and then have the party on Saturday or pizza party or something on Saturday. And they'll come to that for the show and tells. But the same thing, we'd like to have... I was going to say something about that. We'd like to get permission slips before we do a show and tell, too. We've been doing that lately, and that works better. And the parents are used to that. Parents are used to doing it. I had to do one already twice this school year for my kid. And actually, one was for a sex ed class. I had to give a permission slip for a sex ed class, which was funny. That's a whole other story. But I had to do it for another activity that they're doing. And parents are used to dealing with these permission slips for things. So that way you get the name and information, and we always do have an activity close by. And I think the same for the adult market. You guys are doing something somewhere. There should be something at your school or your facility within a couple days so that they have a reason to come. All right. Other marketing things that we want to tweak, are we ready for something else?
I'm good. I think I've got our problem solved.
We're on our tour. We're gonna.
In theory.
Okay.
Yeah. We shall see if.
Except for everybody that's coming tomorrow.
They don't get to go.
Okay. No. Just us.
No, I think we're in the mode of telling the visitor center that there's this list, and then there's going to be a bigger list. And so.
More people show up, and they don't want to let us know. So, okay, got it.
Next weekend, we're doing a Halloween party. We rented out a elementary school gym.
Okay.
And we're doing a bring a friend Halloween party. Kind of a twist.
Why'd you do the elementary school gym and not your school?
Because last time we did the Halloween party, we had too many, and we're twice too many kids now.
Too many sounds like a good problem.
No, our yeah, it is a good problem, but our fire code marshal is pretty onto us. So.
Really? Like on Halloween night, he's gonna like be.
Well, no, we're not doing it on Halloween night. Mm-hmm. We want to have a good turnout for
yeah.
it. So we're doing it on Friday night of next week, and we've already got a sign-up sheet and everything. Friend and dress up or having costume contests and stuff like that. It's an experiment, but so far we've got quite a few friends signed up for it, and we're going to continue. We're going to start marketing them this week and try to get them next week for lessons.
Is there any reason why the friends need to come in before the party to do a class, to prepare for it, to do something?
Yeah, we'll promote for like the birthday parties. We hit them beforehand. We try to get them in there because we tell them that if they come in for classes, we are going to do some word break for the kid. And if they get a couple classes under their belt, then they can come in and actually break a board too.
Yeah, because anytime we do a marketing activity that's not at our facility, then the first priority is to get them to the facility.
Right.
You know, so if you purposefully do one somewhere else, that's okay, but it'd be nice to get them there before, and it'd be nice for when they go there to have a reason to show up afterwards. You know, just winning something, then it's kind of like you just did an event at Home Depot. In fact, I had somebody do an event at Home Depot, kind of following the same things that we're talking about. They did the prize wheel, they did the permission slip, and then they get to break a board, and they got like 26 leads.
That's good.
From Home Depot was last minute too. It was like the week before they found out. So
Costco does a lot of that.
Yeah, Costco will do that. Costco will also do it if sometimes they'll have paid events where you pay a couple $100, and they'll have different community activities.
Yeah, if you're a Costco business member, they let you do all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, I am.
Yeah.
But I haven't. I don't know. Maybe I'll check on that one too.
Yeah,
because
there
that's
you go.
Good. But Home Depot does that. You should definitely check in Home Depot. They do a lot of those kind of things. And sometimes they, one time we went to Home Depot and asked them, and we saved them because they hadn't, I guess they're corporately scheduled to plan them, and it's kind of left to the manager sometimes, and so they corporately plan them, and they hadn't had anything planned, so we ended up getting a lot of coverage there because they didn't have anything else going when they did it.
You know, the other thing to think about, Greg, on an event like that, we start getting too big, is do like, in your case, the, preschool, first, second grade party, and then do the one for the older kids.
Or if you can, like rent a tent and put it out front.
Yeah.
Or one of those bouncy ones. You couldn't get by with that in the parking lot? Why not?
It's against their policy, their insurance, and everything else.
Who, the landlord?
Who is?
The landlord you're talking about?
Yeah,
it's against their policies?
Yeah.
So you actually asked them about that prior? Well, I mean, for the bouncy house stuff, that's really not. If I can put up, if I can put
really, because our fire marshal is really on this. I mean, we have he's even checking on our classes. We're allotted for 50 people. You know, we're having class sizes of 40 plus parents.
I've been
That sounds zoned wrong.
No, it sounds like he's got a fire marshal as a prick.
Oh. When I've done the zoning for those, usually you have a lot more people.
Well, it's every city, and do you have a rear exit?
We do.
I've had fire marshal come into the school and close us down at 6 p.m. on a busy night before. Yeah, that was an interesting story. I fixed it. No, I didn't bribe him. This one was specifically, we had a back door, and two different districts had just merged. So the guy that we had always dealt with was now gone. It was the new guy who was a power-hungry bureaucrat. And so he came in to the school in the middle of the night, evening, and it was packed. But we didn't have a problem with capacity. But the back door had a turn handle on it rather than a crash bar. And for the other guy, that had been just fine, you know, because it didn't actually, if you turned it, it unlocked. But this guy wanted a crash bar. And he wanted a crash bar. It wasn't, you know, maybe 5, 4:30, you know, at the end of his shift. But he wanted a crash bar, so he was going to flag it and close us until we had a crash bar, right? And I wasn't actually there. You know how it is with staff. They just, oh, yes, sir, and then, you know. So, but they got me on the phone. And so I U-turned and said, don't let him go anywhere. And U-turned and got back there. And ended up in kind of a pissing match, but he said, well, by code, you got to have a crash bar. I said, well, we've been here for 5 years and didn't have a crash bar. The only thing that's changed is, like, you're new, right? So if you want to get a crash bar, that's fine. We'll get a crash bar. But we've got, and we had a huge day lined up, you know, tons of intros and all kind of renewal conferences. And finally, I said, well, what exactly are you trying to accomplish with the crash bar rather than this? He goes, well, if there's a crush of people, I said, it's a freaking karate school. What's going to burn? You know, it's a big open room. But okay, if there's a crash of people, they want the door to just open if they crash into it rather than somebody has to think to turn the handle. Okay, fine. I'll buy that. And so I said to my manager, go get a screwdriver. And he goes, what are you doing? Yeah. I took the handle off. He goes, you can't do that. You have to take a crash bar. I said, look, we're open for business tonight. And so if there's a crash of people because for the first time in history of the martial arts industry, there's a fire that people are getting trapped in, it'll be just fine because they'll just all fall out. Do you want me to take it off the hinges too? I can take it off the hinges if you want. We can take it off the hinges and just have a big empty hole, right? He never did come to like me, but we were open for the rest of the evening. And a week or two later, we got a crash bar and it was just fine. In the meantime, my manager was putting the door handle on at night and then taking it back up. You know, because they can't, like, you know, install it immediately. They got to order the thing and drill them.
But that's right? A good example. Just like the school things, just like all these other things, a lot of times there's some bureaucrat and they tell you X. And
I told everybody the story about the balloon, right?
Oh, well, I don't know if everybody heard.
Everybody heard the story about the balloon? Yeah. Just never say no for an answer.
Yeah.
Anybody not heard that story? Okay. You haven't heard that story?
Tell that story because that's another good
story. Okay, I'll give the short version of the story. Is we were doing this big, like, re-grand opening blitz across all the schools and did all kinds of stuff. But one of the things that I did is I did those big balloons on the roof, you know, and did the banners, the grand opening banners. And at one of our locations, which was, like, at the time the headquarters, there's offices there and all kinds of stuff, but we put the balloon on. And the code guy comes in, again, I wasn't there, and says to our manager, that's illegal, you got to take the balloon down. Who had a coronary? I mean, just calls me, we got to take the balloon down, it's illegal. I said, illegal? Look, there's code violation, and then there's handcuffs, and they put you in jail. It's code violation. So calm down. It's a code violation. We, you know, that's not a big deal. They're not going to, like, take you off in handcuffs because there's a balloon on the roof, right? So I get back there, and I get the guy's name, and I call him. And I said, well, what's the problem? He goes, well, it's a code violation. You can't have the balloon on the roof. I said, what permit do we need to buy to leave the thing? He goes, well, there is no permit. You just can't have the balloon. Okay. I said, well, what's the problem? He goes, well, there's been a lot of complaints. I said, a lot? He said, well, we had a complaint. I said, oh, it was Joe Smith, the head of the Homeowners Association, who was complaining about that. Oh, you know him. Yeah, he complains about everything. And so, you know, and now he's kind of laughing. He goes, yeah, well, okay, even though he's a jerk, there is a code. You got to take it down. I said, okay, well, given that I'm not going to, what happens next? And he said, what do you mean? I said, well, there's a process, right? I mean, what do you do next? He goes, well, you know, if you fail to comply, we serve you a summons. I say, okay, fine. What's the summons for? It's for a court date. Okay. Well, how long does it take to serve the summons? Great. How long is the court date after that? Okay. If we go to court, what do they say that you got to take it down? I said, well, so for what you just told me, it's going to take you 10 days for the summons, 10 days for the court, and another 10 days or so after that. I said, I only rented it for 6 weeks. It's going to be up. It's going to be down in 3 weeks. So bring it on, you know, bring me the summons. And by then he's laughing, and he goes, So it's going to be down in 3 weeks? I said, yeah, it's going to be down in 3 weeks. Okay, no problem. You know, my guy was literally unplugging it and pulling it off the roof.
I was talking to somebody about a similar thing the other day. I was suggesting some of those bandit signs, the real estate signs.
Oh, those are illegal.
Yeah, they're illegal. Yeah, that's the exact comment. I said, well, how illegal? You know, like, what do they do? Well, they take them. So, well, they cost about $5 a piece if you order them in bulk. Order a couple hundred of them and then just put them out every day. But then they're going to take them.
Using $500 for...
Yeah, now there's some cities,
there's occasion,
that's the question. Yeah, and then you find out what the thing is. But you guys put some up, right?
Oh, we took them down.
You took them down after
we saw them. I do that every year. They call me and they say, we're going to fine you $250 per sign. And I say, okay, I'll take them down. And then I leave them up for a couple of days. And then I put them back up next year. And I've never been fined.
No, we got called.
The question is going to be, is the process that they call, and I would ask them, so what is the process, you know, do you guys, well, yeah, if you put them up, we're going to call you, and then what happens? And then maybe there's like three calls that they initiate, and then they send you a notice, and then they said this, and then they're going to actually fine you. So if that's always going to happen, and they know I'm going to get a written notice a week before they actually fine me, then
you know how hard to push it.
Yeah. And you just keep doing it.
I got a bill from the post office one time. We sent out like 30 kids doing a flyer pizza party, and one set was putting them in the mailboxes. And what they'll do is they'll bill you for first class postage for every flyer.
So what?
Yeah, I just took it away. Yeah. It's not like they're going to follow up on it.
Yeah, there's another one where the Homeowners Association near one of the schools is deathly against any kind of flyering or door hangers. And so I had a door hanger company that I was trying out.
No, hey, saw that. Just ring the doorbell and actually talk to the people.
Well, I was having this company do it, right? And so I don't think I wanted these guys to talk to them. And the guy says, well, I just got to tell you, I was doing like the whole valley, the whole all Phoenix area. And the guy says, well, this one area, Tatum Ranch, they will go ballistic if you put anything out there. They are totally psycho about the flyers. And they were. And I said, well, what happens if we put them out? He goes, well, they're going to send you letters and they're going to be really mad. I said, yeah, and then what else? And the same thing. He goes, well, I have nothing else. They're just going to be really mad. They're not going to like you.
Okay. No. The head of the Homeowners Association isn't going to like you.
Well, but
nobody else is even going to.
Here's what I asked him. I said, but you've done it before, right? He goes, yeah, that's why I know they're mad. I said, okay. Well, when you do it there, what kind of result do your clients get? Oh, it's really good. It was, too. We got awesome results. Nobody else is afraid.
Yeah.
You know, but there's no real we got to separate consequences, what they really are. You know, and that's something like in Houston, if everybody gets threatened, that could be absolutely awesome for you because you're the only one putting signs up.
Yeah. The police came and said that he had 17 of them. He was going to write me a sign.
That's exactly what they showed up.
Yeah. Well, they showed up and they said, look, I'm not saying you should.
The city without zoning laws, is that strict on those?
That is funny.
It is funny.
That is funny there.
So I was like, okay, I'm going to go get him right now. He was like, yeah.
Yeah, we need to turn the sound off if anybody thinks we're not telling anybody to do anything illegal. I mean, we're not. But there's illegal and there's, you know, a code violation. There's other consequences.
Look, they're going to send you a bill they're going to throw away. There's a fine that's enforceable, and there's handcuffs. Never risk handcuffs.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, the others.
They showed up, too. They're like, well, we didn't know. It's like, well, and then we said, hey, well, what about all these real estate companies and new home builders?
Yeah.
You know, like, hey, don't worry about them. We're worried about you. We're like, it's like, you know what? This is this.
You mean the real estate companies get to do it?
They some, yeah.
Not real estate.
They're builders.
Yeah. Well, politicians get to do it for sure. I try to build signs the size of a politician's signs. I was going to just stick it in. I'm serious. I was going to, and they were going to be red, white, and blue. And say karate will solve all these problems or something like that. You know, like it was going to be really like anti-political. Really want to solve your problems? Do karate. Something like that.
You can get a sign permit. To put them up in Houston.
Most of what they'll do,
but it's really, really, really expensive.
Most of the regulations they exempt themselves from, right? So, if they have a do not call list, robocalls,
they
exempt themselves from it.
Who does?
The politicians. That's why they put those big signs up.
Anytime you see a new regulation limiting whether it's email or broadcast voicemail or text or whatever, it'll always exempt political speech.
Yeah, I was going to do it. It depends on the fine. Like you say, it's really expensive. What? How much does it cost? Maybe if it's $1,000, but I'm the only one putting signs up, I'll pay the $1,000. But the problem,
I'll see if they're actually going to enforce it.
Right. Yeah. Well, the real estate sign situation,
no handcuffs,
or the political sign, it was really expensive. They were, and I'm like, the politicians. So there's a trade-off. I mean, I don't really want to piss off the politicians and put my sign right in front of like the new governor's sign. They may remember that, but.
Yeah.
But be on the news for that.
Just to continue to beat the same dead horse. When you've got the concept as the birthday party. So you've got the list of everybody attending the birthday party, right? You have the ability to mail to them, which you should. You have the ability to send a broadcast voicemail, which you should. You have the ability to text to them, which you should. You have the ability to have a live person call, which you should. And you have the ability to email to them, which you should, right? And what I hear a lot of people saying is, well, we send them all an email. You know, have a live person call them all, text them, leave a voicemail, and send a piece of mail to them.
This
right?
is almost the order. You've got to mail them. You've got to voicemail them. Email's like, it's still important. You should do all of them.
Yeah, if you
live person.
This is
number one.
This is number two. This is number three. No, I'm sorry. This is number four. This is number three, and this is number five. Right? In order of effectiveness, right? So.
But you still do all of them.
Yeah. But see, what most people do is they do the thing that's easiest and cheapest and just like email them all, right? Well, okay. Yeah, I'd rather email them all than not email them all because it's easy and cheap.
Mail's better than voicemail and text.
Yeah, because it's gonna get in there. It's like me handing you something. You have to take. Well,
I could make an argument that text and mail are about even at this point.
The problem with text is deliverability because you may not have the actual cell number or something. So mail.
Well, and it's like a tweet. Right, it's 140 characters or something like that. So, you know, a text with a link, but it's still a broadcast medium, right? So the anybody who texted me yesterday, if I didn't see it when it came in, I'm not ever looking back, mm-hmm. right? So mail has the advantage of it's sitting there in the stack. I pull it out, I put it on the refrigerator, it's sitting on my desk. You know, I mean, there's stuff that I intend to sooner or later get around to that's stacked up on my desk, but if they sent me a text 2 months ago, it's gone forever.
They must have sent you a text 2 months ago about the roster for the bus.
They didn't send me shit. But does that make sense? And then the other thing to beat a dead horse is just because they don't respond today doesn't mean next week isn't going to work. Doesn't mean next month is going to work. Doesn't mean that January isn't going to work. Doesn't mean that May isn't going to work. Doesn't mean that this time next year isn't better. Right? So once you have a lead, stay on this cycle. Right? So they should be getting email forever. They should be getting mail forever. Periodically, you should hit a run and then have a live person call. Right? And your staff has to be trained. You don't have any intros today, get on the lead list, right? Well, who do you call? Well, start at the top and work your way backwards, right? And when I say start at the top, I mean start most recent and go backwards, right? But with all of these things you should have every lead on at least a 24-month or 36-month contact cycle before you give up on them, right? And, you don't have to make it complicated. It could be you have 6 weeks worth of stuff, and then you just start over, then you start over, then you start over, right? If somebody got a postcard from you in August, they're not going to remember in November that they got exactly the same postcard. And in fact, if they do, it helps response, right? So, but again, this is the thing, and everybody in here is just as guilty as anyone else, is we send them an email, but a live person didn't call them. Or a live person called them once, but we didn't send them a text and a voicemail and a piece of mail. We called them all. within 24 hours of the party, but then we didn't call them in a week, 2 weeks, 5 weeks, 10 weeks, next month, you know, right? And what you want to be thinking about is all these live events, and again, beating a dead horse here, but all these live events, a big part of the objective is developing a good mail list, right? And by mail list, I mean text, voicemail, direct mail, email, everything else, but it's developing a good database of people who have expressed at least a little bit of interest, right?
So even if, like your results were 50% would set an appointment, 50% of those would enroll, which would be 25% success rate, that's okay. I mean, I think we can do a little bit better, somewhere between 25 and 50%. But that's for just enrolling them. But all the other people are still on this list.
Yeah, but now you have 75% of them
right.
That are good prospects.
Very good prospects.
Yeah. And probably, and see, if you did all this, if you had, you know, let's say one birthday party where there were 30 kids, and so now to make the numbers round, I have 20 leads and 10 of them that I've enrolled, right, to make the numbers work. Well, surely over 2 years you could get another 10 of them enrolled, right? And so how much is all this going to cost? Well, the expensive piece is the live person on the phone, right? And the second most expensive piece is the mail. These aren't free, but they're really cheap. And this is essentially free, right? So this is free. This is really cheap. This is really cheap. This is not bad, right? So if I was mailing to them 3 postcards a month, that's $1.50 a month, right? So if I spent $2 a month times 2 years, that's only, what, $48? I mean, $50. Would it be worth $50 a lead if I only got 1 out of 5? And so if I could get half, it'd be well worth it, right? So, see, I mean, by the time you're all done, if you just think in terms of you're building this database, and every one of them you're willing to spend, let's say, $100, mailing to them 2 or 3 times a month, all of the other stuff, you know, sooner or later, you'll get a lot of them enrolled, right? And imagine, as you start getting that database bigger and bigger and bigger, look at all the people in your community that you're communicating with all the time, right? And the irony of that, and again, Greg, back when we were doing all of the broadcast advertising in Denver, you know, I knew, like TV, we got a lot of calls right away, but I also knew everything else we were doing was working a lot better, right? So you'd hear that kind of feedback. If I'd been doing a lot of TV, and then I did direct mail, the direct mail worked better. And if I did a lot of TV and we went into an elementary school, they already knew who we were, right? So you've always got to realize the synergistic effect of this stuff. And this type of thing, what you're doing is you're being real front of mind with, again, doesn't matter whether you're adult market or kids market, but if you're talking about elementary schools, if you're really top of mind with every kid in Joey's first grade class, as they end up in second grade and third grade, and then you're doing other stuff with that elementary school, you know, what ends up happening, right? I mean, it really starts to make a big effect. And like with the birthday party things, if there's 30 kids from Joey's first grade class that come in, and I end up with 5 or 7 of them enrolled, you have that little synergy of that class, and now through second and third grade, I mean, it just keeps expanding. Does that make sense? But anyway, did you get your topic covered thoroughly enough?
I think so.
Okay.
Thank you.
And again, maybe the other thing to beat the dead horse, let's think of any event. So if I'm at a movie theater, and let's say I'm at the movie theater on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and I'm collecting leads on Friday and appointments, hopefully, leads and appointments on Saturday, leads and appointments on Sunday. The ones that I got on Friday, how soon do I want to communicate with them?
Quickly.
Right? See, my rule of thumb was anything we did over the weekend, I wanted everybody on the phone Sunday nights. Right? Now, none of the staff ever enjoys the idea that they're going to be working the phones from 6 o'clock to 9 o'clock on Sunday night. Right? But the advantage of Sunday night is everybody's home, and you know, in most cases you can get hold of them. But now with all this other stuff, the leads you collect on Friday, they can get a text
They can get a voicemail from you on Friday. They can get an email from you on Friday, right? I mean, I've seen events where there's somebody there data entering the data as you go, so at the end of the night you have a text, I mean a database. Or where you have lag time, so as soon as they gave you the contact information and walked away from the booth, you text them a thank you and here's your confirmation. So like while they're sitting in the movie, they've already got a text on their phone as a reminder, right? So the more timely you can be on that, and we would always, leads that came in on Friday, we'd try to get a piece of mail in the mail on Saturday. Leads that came in on Saturday, we'd get mail to the post office on Sunday. And leads that came in through Sunday, we would get mail a little later than Monday morning, right? I mean, drop to the mail, you know, to the mailbox. And again, nowadays, like any of them that you collect on Friday, if you put an Excel spreadsheet together, you can do a text, a voicemail, an email, and a postcard. And like Amazing Mail, I love Amazing Mail, they'll mail it out of Phoenix tomorrow, right? So if I date, you know, if I upload the list today, I can send the postcard out, they'll have it printed in the mail tomorrow, right? And so, you know, in the worst case,
Amazing Mail.
Yeah, I mean, the three services I love nowadays are Amazing Mail for color postcards and Call Loop for text and voicemail. You guys are using Infusion. You can text through Infusion, but we're using...
Use some Call Loop now.
Yeah. We use Infusion and have a different text messaging system set up for Infusion. But I use Call Loop instead. Just easy and cheap. So those are two. What was the other one?
Amazing Mail, Call Loop, and AWeber.
AWeber, yeah. And AWeber and Call Loop are designed to work together. So you can, does everybody know what I mean by that? You can set up a data entry screen or an opt-in screen. Really the same thing, right? Opt-in is the prospect on your website is filling it out. Data entry is just you're sending your staff member to go fill it out, right? But you can set up a data entry screen that once they enter the data, it automatically goes into Call Loop and AWeber, or Call Loop and any of the other major email systems. We'll have a lot of it set up where it'll go into Infusion and then trigger all this stuff. But then I always export the list and use Call Loop for doing onesie, twosie and stuff. Does that make sense?
Anything else on all that, Jan?
I just have one other question. I'm finding out in all the schools, and I'm doing assemblies, like bully assemblies for October. But the problem is from the bully assembly, I know that you schedule something within 48 hours, like, you know, do the assembly Thursday and have something Friday night. But besides giving them a little flyer, inviting them back Friday night, because I'm in the schools, I have to be careful. Is there any other advice or anything else that you guys have?
To increase response at your party.
Yeah, because, well, I'll do all these seminars, and then I'll get one or three people to show up at the school.
There's two directions. One direction is, what are you handing them?
I was
flyer.
Giving him a little invitation to, you know, if you want to learn more about bullies, come to our bully seminar on this day and stay later for a pizza party after or something like that to try to motivate him.
Well, besides getting permission slips for the kids, which I know he's going to say, before you told me that idea, what we started doing and we still use it is if we're going to an assembly, even if there's 100 kids, we'll get priority mail envelopes from the post office, which is actually technically mail fraud because you're supposed to use them for mailing, but they are free. If you're really worried about mail fraud for some of you people that don't like to do illegal things, you can buy fake priority mail envelopes at the post office.
The eagle print.
And they're awesome because...
But you can also go to USPS.com and UPS,
and the order
postal service. We'll deliver 1,000 of them to your door
right.
for free.
So get those. Okay, take the priority mail envelopes, and then we stuff them with as much stuff as possible. So we'll stuff them. Let's just say it's a show and tell. We'll put a letter that says, what's all this stuff in it? And then a bunch of stuff. And one thing will be usually something dimensional, like a pen or I'll throw a Frisbee in there, whatever stuff we've got laying around. And that makes the package bulky. So when the parents get it at home, number one, they'll see this priority mail envelope. They don't normally get those.
Like what tells that.
Yeah, and then there's stuff in it. And there's, you know, it's hard stuff that's inside of it. And then we'll put
lumpy.
Lumpy, yeah.
Thank you. So and we'll put a guest pass. We'll put the invitation to the party. We'll also put the invitation to the party on the outside of the envelope. So like in the address section, because that's what people look at. So, you know, we're invited to the pizza party on Saturday, whatever the thing is that we're doing. In your case, the bullying prevention event. And in your case with the bullying prevention event, you might have a letter of why that's important. You might have some testimonials in there.
You might have your PhD thesis.
Might have my, yeah, you guys can take my PhD dissertation, throw it in there. I mean, you could put all kinds of crap in there. Yeah. Yeah. After all that work, you better call it that. Yeah. Anyway, so what essentially happens is then they get a big packet of stuff. Now, if you really wanted to make it bigger, and we haven't gotten the opportunity to do this that much, but if you're going to do an event on a Saturday and you want to hit the three best schools, and you get a relationship with those schools enough to do the event,
okay. They're still getting you.
Then what I'd like to do is do an event on the Friday before and the Friday after, two or three times. You know, because it's hard to, sometimes, not hard, it takes some effort to get into the school. It takes some effort to have a relationship with the school. But when you do get the permission to do the event, if you say, you know, the best way to do this is if we do three events. We do one here, we're going to cover this, another we're going to cover this, another cover this, and we'll do your whole PE, we'll do all your PE classes for the next three Thursdays, or whatever day you want to do it. Okay, that's great. The PE teacher loves you because now he's got three Thursdays taken care of. So now you've got three times you're doing that. Now every time we'll give them a packet of stuff. If we did do that three consecutive weeks, if we did it on Friday, we'd have an event Saturday, but it's the moderate event, but they still can come for something. We'd have an event the following one, and the big, huge event. Every one of them would be reminded of everyone, and they'd still come to the big event. So you're multiplying. So all these things are about multiplying the focus, of multiplying the number of times we talk to people, multiplying the effort. And it's not that hard. It's harder to get into the school initially. Once you get into the school, then we want to expand and escalate what our relationship is with the school. And I probably should comment on that, too. One thing that our rule is we never finish an event with the school without scheduling the next event. That's our rule. We do it all the time, though. Sometimes I go, hey, well, what do you have next? And they go, oh, we're going to call them back later. But the call them back later thing is not right. Like, you know, if you know, remember when you were dating, if you asked a girl on a date, for us guys, we ask a girl on a date, and then we're going to, if we want to go out again, we better ask them before the date. Otherwise, they'll forget about us, right? Find somebody else to go out with. You don't wait and call them later. If you like them. If you don't like them, then you don't call them later. Anyway, that's another story. I shouldn't use that metaphor for anything in my life. Anyway, some of you guys know me well enough to know that's not funny. Anyway, go ahead, Turk.
I think one of the other things that we found works really well for events is that we hire a face painter.
Balloon twisters are good too.
Set the face painter up right next to us.
Yeah.
Right, and then in order for them to get free face paint, they have to come over and fill out the information, and then we give them a little, like one of those Live Strong bracelets, and then they can go over and they get the face paint.
Oh, that's cool.
And the face painter is one of our students who is amazing, a very, very, very good face painter. And then we get an opportunity to talk to mom and dad while they're waiting in line.
The rubber bracelet, though, doesn't say Live Strong.
It says school's name.
Right, right. Yeah, so one of those rubber bracelets. Where'd you get those printed?
Just go out to, like, what's that real cheap place? Oriental Trading?
Yeah, okay, they'll do a good one. Or they'll do a cheap one.
Can Oriental Trading do a custom print on that? They can do a custom print on those?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know.
They can now. They didn't used to when I checked into original. Two years ago I checked into that, and it was real expensive, or 3 years. It was a while ago. Because you saw those Live Strong was like the big thing for a while. It's more expensive if you get the indented imprint, right? If they print it, it's not so bad.
I think it was still less than a dollar.
Yeah.
But it's not indented in the plastic though, right? It's like
it
printed.
Is.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, that's great. Okay, so the price is like this one?
Yeah.
Well, this one's printed.
No, it's indented. It's just like off the block.
Okay. But yeah, that's a great idea. Yes, but the general theme is you're doing an event. It's got to be, if the parents are there, we get the lead information. If the parents aren't there, we'd like to pre-get the lead information. If for some reason you're an event where you, that's just impossible, like somebody says, hey, tomorrow we're having a billion kids at this thing and you just want to show up because you're there, and the parents aren't going to be there, then you want to make sure the packet that you give them is exciting enough. So really all of those things should happen. The stuff that you give them should be exciting enough so the parent pays attention to it. We pre-get the lead information, which would be a permission slip, or in your case, fill out the thing before they get their thing, before they get their face painted. And there should be a reason for them to take the action. But all of it should be designed to get them in the school and get the lead information, those two things. And not just hand a pass out, not just provide information about us, not just make sure they know we're nice guys. That's why I have objections sometimes to people doing a lot of charity work. I don't have an objection to charity work, but we know Master Brandon, you guys know him. I mean, he's a friend of ours that's done tens of thousands of dollars in money raising for all kinds of charities. He does a fantastic job. Everybody in his town loves him. It doesn't generate any business for him. He says it does, but all the business he actually generates is because he gets, like, you know, it does help him a little bit, but it doesn't really, everything should have a one of those outcomes where they either come to your school with their parent, or you get their information from their parent, essentially, somehow. But hopefully that helped with the show and tell. Well, bigger packet, more stuff.
I would add something else just from a standpoint of how to think about it, is I'd much rather deal with, from a return standpoint, I'd rather have three groups of 30 kids each that I teach a class to than go do an assembly of 600. Okay? And the closer it is to their butts are in the seat, they're in there listening or watching, the further away you come from ever getting them to be excited or doing that, right? So we used to do tons of demos everywhere, sometimes, you know, 3,000 kids. And when we shifted to PE Teacher for the Day and went and did, you know, like a bully seminar or whatever it might be, but to groups of 20 or 30 or even 60 kids at a time, the effectiveness multiplied, right? So the first thing is, if you can go teach them a class versus having them just watch, then it puts them in the mindset of being a student and being able to do this rather than it's just entertainment, right? So that's the first thing. And then if you can go to a school and it's more time efficient to go do 45 minutes with the entire school, but I'd rather do 30-minute slots all day long.
Like
and
all the PE classes, everybody.
Yeah, or any other excuse, any of the specials or whatever. But to go through and teach them in small groups, I'd much rather have that. And that's with or without getting permission slips, with or without distributing information. And then at the next level, when I'm distributing information, the problem is you've got to get the kid excited about wanting to go talk to mom and dad about it, and you've got to get it to get to mom and dad, right? And so I like his idea. The other thing I always do is whatever action it is I want them to take, whether it's to register for the program or something, I always do it on postcard size pieces of paper. Cut it down, four up on hard cardstock, and give them something they can shove in their back pocket, right? So they're not trying to carry a piece of paper around. That's
we've
probably
got
not
stickers
going to
on
home.
The chest, like the police department.
That's, yeah.
The only problem with that sometimes, if you don't do it right, the stickers peel off real easy.
Yeah.
So if they're at the end of the day, if you do the thing at the end of the day, that's awesome because now you stick it on them and they go with it. But if you do it at the early in the day,
yeah. That was the next thing I was going to say. Especially the littler ones, if you have a sticker and you stick it on their chest, right? And the sticker can say, I want a prize today, call and find out what I want, or something like that, right? With the website and the phone number. But then you have it more likely it's going to get home. But in practical terms, if I go in and I get lead information, that multiplies the effectiveness by at least 10 times. Than if I just go do a presentation. But I'm better off if I'm teaching classes. And then I've got to think of what can the kids stick in their pocket, what can I put on their chest, and what can I have that, you know, if it gets home in their backpack, the parents aren't going to miss it, right?
And
so you want to get all that going.
Yeah, I would add, by the way, the schools a lot of times are saying they're paperless. Like my kid's school is supposed to be paperless. If you saw the backpack full of crap he brings home all the time, I mean, all the schools that are saying they're paperless are, and it's stuff about all kinds of things, like chess classes and things that aren't related to their school programs and all kinds of stuff. So don't believe any of that. Again, back to that, well, they said that it's paperless, so we're just going to have an email without. Well, that's great, you know, but if you're doing bullying prevention, you say, this is a really important thing. And because of that, we know that people only open about 30% of their emails at best. So it would be very, I think it would be better for all the kids if we gave this flyer out to them in their backpacks, too.
Also,
you know. Yeah, in addition. Right, and we've never had them really object to that. I mean, you know, if other people figure it out, maybe they'll start being worse about it. But it really is, a lot of times people just assume, even the schools, that the stuff they email out is actually getting delivered.
Yeah. Well, Chase and Data School, they do a every weekend broadcast voicemail.
Okay.
So they do an announcement by broadcast voicemail. And they also send out email. And they also send a bunch of stuff home in the Friday folder. And what you want to do is you want to get them to do all of it, right? So if you can get them to do a broadcast voicemail and get them to do a text.
And I want them to send the flyer home on Wednesday, too, and Thursday.
Yeah.
If there's the Friday folder, I want them in Wednesday. I want them in the day also. Also, not instead of, but in addition, because they're going to notice it. Because those of you got kids in the 13-year-old or under range, you know, we get a lot of crap from, I mean, we get all kinds of stuff. There's no way you're going to look at all that stuff. So you got to provide more. It's like the email question, Jan, you asked last time, well, should I email them once a week? Or did I say two or three
twice
times
a
week or more
twice
or more, twice a day? Yeah, well, that's going to piss them off. Well, it's now we're in the phase where they're immune to it, and now you've got to do so much just to get above the noise. If you don't do enough, you're just lost in the noise. And it's kind of unfortunate because it makes for more work for us, and you are going to put a lot of stuff in their mailbox, but you've got to do that.
Well, you said something there. It's almost like back to the bureaucrat, you know, giving you the ticket. If you ever change your behavior because somebody got pissed off, then you'll never do anything, right? And Jeff Smith and I were having this conversation yesterday with the school. And here was my analogy. At all times, there's 10 to 20% of the general population that's insane. Okay? Is that insane? Is that your experience?
I don't know.
Okay? But let's be optimistic and say it's only 10%. And in your student body, you're always going to have 10% that's insane. My experience is they tend to fall on one or either end of the spectrum. You have 5% that no matter what happens, they're pissed off. And you have 5% that you could probably cuss them out in their face and they would still think you walk on water. Right? And you should never trust either one. The ones that are insanely enthusiastic about your school are easy to flip.
Mm-hmm.
So any little thing can happen all of a sudden there. In this quadrant, and your mission is to figure out in your student body which are the ones that are insane and fire them as quickly as possible, nicely, so they don't come shoot, right? But when it comes to doing any of this stuff, you've got to realize anything you do is going to piss off the ones that are in this category. The only way not to piss them off, well, this is even wrong. I said this with Keith Affner one time. I said, well, people just don't like change, and you know, we have some portion of our people, anything we have changed, are going to be pissed off. He goes, no, you're wrong about that. I said, what do you mean? He goes, yeah, some portion are going to be pissed off no matter what. So if you don't change anything, you're pissed off you didn't change it. Right? So I thought that was a better way to look at it, is you're always going to have this. Within your student body, the mission is to find the 10% and get them to go away. Right? Because sooner or later, something crazy is going to happen. If nothing else, they're going to suck too much time. Within any other marketing activity you do. I mean, I've had people call and threaten to kill me because a 12-year-old put a flyer on their door. I mean, there's just some portion of the population that's insane, right? So you can't be afraid of sending email because somebody is going to flame you back and yell at you, right? And what a lot of us do is we get the one or two insane ones, and then we let that set policy for everybody, right? You got to be extremely careful about never letting that happen. So you get the, you know, I hear this all the time about pricing is, well, what about this example? Well, I'm not trying to solve every example. If you're getting 75, 80%, you're doing a fine job. There's going to be 20% you're not going to get.
Doesn't matter what the reason is, right? And, you know, email is like, nowadays is like the last thing people get mad about because they mostly don't read it. And if they do read it, there's an opt-out link on it.
And they delete. It's easier to delete than opt out.
Yeah.
So you shouldn't worry about getting opted out too much because people more likely delete.
Yeah.
Which means you just got to get through the noise one of the 50 times that you sent them. Just so we want to validate what Master Oliver said here, an estimated 26.2% of American ages 18 and older, or about one in four adults, suffer from a diagnosable mental disorder in a given year. So that number is actually.
I was being honest.
So you know when we say this. It's not.
Does that have a male female skew?
Pardon me?
Does that have a male female skew?
No, I'm not saying.
No, you're not
going to do this. You want me to guess?
No.
No, or just in my experience. I don't want to say it whether it is or not.
Well, what was that one that was going around Facebook? It was, you know, 25% of all women are on some type of medication for mood disorders. Oh my God, 75% of them are running around undiagnosed. but so there you go, right? And so you just got to know that some portion of them are just insane, and it goes both ways, right? They're just insane, and God, that is annoying. Are they going to weed whack all
the time? I think the ones that are worse are almost the ones that are insanely happy with you. Because that's. Because I don't know about you guys, but those are the ones that cause me trouble later, and they
That's
love
right.
me and they're
the entire
that?
Time.
Yeah, they love me and they love everything we do, and they want to help you and they want to do extra stuff, and then, you know, you didn't give them an accolade for something and they're pissed off and they want to run to another instructor
they
and they're all mad.
They were supposed to get this star.
Yeah,
and they had to wait 3 days to get this star because of, yeah.
Yeah, just nuts. Way too many stories about that. But those are the ones that are the worst. At least the ones that are yelling at you, you can identify.
Yeah. But you've got to realize either one. I mean, the ones that are in your face all the time, no matter what you do, that you walk on water, they're just as crazy as the ones who are pissed off about everything, right? And it just doesn't take much to set them off. You know, it seems like the only time I've ever been contacted by lawyers over the years were the raving band one day. Something didn't quite go their way, and now they're... You know, brother-in-law is an attorney, and you're getting, you know. And you would think that crazy people were at least surrounded by support mechanisms where everybody else was sane, but that I haven't found that to be true either. You know, well, a lot of times they just are surrounded by other people who support their nuttiness.
Well, the data supports that one out of four people are crazy, so
yeah.
One out of five, somewhere between one in five and one out of four. So,
like 20%.
Yeah, 20%.
And some of them are in there, statistically, some are in that room. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2.
Everybody but here.
Yeah,
we're
exactly.
all filtered out. Martial arts helped us all.
Yeah.
We're not,
right.
None of us.
Yeah, no.
Not me.
Does that come and go?
It depends on the day.
So is it 100% of the population that it is at some point?
It's actually 26% within a given year.
Within a given year?
Yeah, within a given year. So that means maybe everybody over...
Some period of time,
yeah.
Okay. Not necessarily a given room, though, right?
What's that?
Not necessarily in a given room.
I guess, yeah. I guess that could be true. You know, you could have a whole bunch of sane ones in the same place at the same time. Okay. What else today do we... We've got a pretty full agenda tomorrow and the next day, so today is our opportunity to share successes or work on specific problems. Anything else that's lingering?
You said half an hour, another 2% retention. Is that right?
He was running about 4%.
Four.
Yeah, 3.8 or something. Buzz Durkin.
So 10 things Buzz was doing had 2%.
We have a really good recording of me doing an interview with Buzz.
Oh.
I think it's in the website. If you search for Buzz Durkin, you should be able to find it. It's really good. If it's not up right now, I'll track it down for you.
What's his last name, sir?
Durkin. But that doesn't negate answering that question. Chris Rapold is another one who always had excellent retention. And Chris Rapold. And I've got some really good recordings of Chris from like one of the original boot camps. Chris did a thing. Actually, his was on public relations. He was really, really good at getting articles in the local newspapers and stuff. But if you were to let's talk about Buzz's retention from a standpoint of two things. Is it was not dynamic, charismatic instructors. And it was not dynamic, robust curriculum. He teaches very traditional Wei Chi Ru. If you've ever seen what those guys do, they learn like four forms over 40 years. I mean, literally. And, you know, the sparring they do is like bare knuckle, full contact, punch each other in the stomach as hard as they can type of stuff. And what he does do, though, is it's all about personal relationship with each individual student, no matter how big the school is, right? And he, for years, was running a very big school numbers-wise, probably not as big as you are now, but, I mean, it wasn't like 100 people and they all stayed forever. It was, you know, 400 or 500 people in super small town. Suburban Boston, but like way out in the sticks where the population is like 3,000 people. Probably more like your town, only, you know, smaller population immediately. But the level of attention to detail and the relationship with him was just incredible, right? So I remember in that call we did, and he's on my list. If somebody will remind me, I'll try to put him on the phone with us in the next week or two. It's been on my list for a while. I mean, I can get him on the phone anytime I want. It just, you know, it sits on the to-do list on point five or something. But the thing was is that, you know, I gave the example of Hafner of taking the Polaroids of everybody and writing down the names and using that as flashcards and forcing all the staff to know every student's name. And he would always do that quick start process like we've been talking about with the renewals. But for the first month, everybody was pre-scheduled for appointment for every time. They'd have an instructor assigned to them, work with them a little bit individually right before the group class or right after the class. Same thing that we do as the renewal prep, but he was just doing it to make sure they got a smooth start, right? I mean, that's, you know, in Hafner's case. But in Buzz's case, you take all that kind of stuff and multiply it a lot. And, you know, the story he told when we were talking was, you know, teenage kid gets a new Mustang that's 10 years old and he's really excited about it. Next time he comes in class, Buzz has a card for him for the car wash and card for him for the gas station. Just wanted to high five you and here's the deal. With any little thing that went wrong, one of Buzz's, if you wanted to categorize it in two basic categories, one was never letting an opportunity to recognize the student, sibling of student, parent of the student, grandmother of the student, never let an opportunity to recognize them go wasted, right? So whether it's flowers on the birthday or cookies on the birthday or a gift card to somewhere, never missing that kind of opportunity. And on the other side of it, it's never missing an opportunity to do overwhelming service recovery, right? So, Buzz, if it was something trivial like the billing company pulled their payment on the 10th and it was supposed to be the 12th. Well, you know, for most of us, okay, well, 2 days, right? The number is right, you know, so what? You know, in Buzz's case, it's the florist has a whole bunch of Buzz Durkin Wei Chi Ru coffee mugs. And they're going to get the bouquet of flowers and the coffee mug with an effusive apology note from him, apologizing for that mistake. It never should have happened. Does that make sense, Eric? So I would say in three general categories was just being such a nice person, knowing everybody, and truly and sincerely, really caring about them all, right? And you can systematize all that, but the first way you have to systematize it is only hire sincere, nice, honest people and never hire assholes, right? You know, it's kind of the opposite of who we were talking about at lunch today, right? So that's number one. Number two is constantly having listening systems in place to learn about special events that have happened so that you can recognize them, right? So, you know, let's say in your case, in your kids' program, you have the seven-year-old boy who's in the program, and mom mentions that the sister just won state something or other for what, you know, spelling bee or whatever, right? Well, making sure in class that you recognize the sister and you have her stand up and everybody applauds and, you know, she gets something. Well, she's not even the student. But, you know, the brother's going to be impressed, but the mom's going to be super impressed, right? So it's a combination of, like, just being nice to them, which sounds easier than it is, then never missing an opportunity for recognition and doing overwhelming service recovery, right? And did you ever read that book, what's his name? The car salesman.
I know the one you're talking about where he sold like a billion cars.
Yeah.
He had pictures of all his customers up. I can't remember.
Everybody not remember the name?
Joe Girard. Girard? Sounds
Joe
right.
Girard. I think it's Joe Girard. But in Joe Girard's book, I think that's right, Joe Girard. And he was like the Guinness Book of World Record holders for selling the most cars of anybody, you know, ever in the history, right? And by the way, his book was like 30 years ago. I mean, it's a long time ago. But that was a couple of his points. Joe Girard, just like I just talked about, had a letter-writing campaign where every month there was an excuse for anybody who had ever bought something from him to get a personal card from him. And some of them were just, I like you. And some of them were, we have the Halloween party I want you to come down to, right? But every month, and this is like pre-computer databases, right? This is 5,000 people, 10,000 people, 15,000 people are getting a card from him every month. The other thing that Girard said in that book, though, was, you know, I want there to be a problem with the service department so I can show you how on top of getting it corrected I can be. That's an interesting comment, right? But it was Girard's thing was constantly communicating. So you bought a car from him 2 years ago. You're on his list forever, right? And you're getting just a ton of and this, again, before email, text, it was all direct mail, right? And calls. But the other thing was service recovery, just, you know, over, going above and beyond. Once something went wrong, overwhelming them with how on top of it you were and how apologetic you were for it. Does any of that help, Eric?
Yeah, that's great.
But to me, that's really the three categories that he does so well, is just nice people who really know everybody and care, and massive service recovery efforts, almost finding things that we wouldn't even think of was something that went wrong in order to go above and beyond to recover. And then number three was never missing an opportunity for recognition and having listening systems in place to find those opportunities.
We implemented with our staff last month something that's been going pretty well. All of our assistants and everybody are requiring that during the night they go sit down with parents and just chit-chat for just a couple minutes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's one of those things that kind of just you forget, you lose sight of. It's such a powerful tool because they're finding out so much stuff. You know, there could be a problem with this, there could be a problem with that. You know, Johnny's not happy about coming to karate, so you can catch it, you can be a lot more proactive. But it just takes, like you're saying, that listening, that a conscious effort of somebody saying, okay, I'm going to go talk to five parents. And you know, if you got four staff members or something, you just talk to 20 people and you'll drum up some renewals, you'll drum up just stuff. And then, you know, at the meeting, you say, well, what'd you guys find out? And use that opportunity for the staff to say, okay, I found this out about this mom and this. And when you're going through and doing that exercise you always have, doing that ABC in the students, mm-hmm. you come up with all the stuff. Because we ABC not only the students, but we ABC the parents.
Parents, yeah.
And so, you know, we say, oh, Johnny's doing great in class, but mom's not so happy because he's got a C in math, and he's doing this and that. So it really kind of helps tighten from all angles.
Or we've been so busy because grandmother's in the hospital, or we've been so busy because Susie's prepping for this, and that's been keeping us from getting Joey here. You end up hearing all of the stuff that if you didn't have a mechanism in place to find out, you would never know, right? And then you go back to the buzz thing, which is there's something that happened directly with the school or tangentially to the school that you can apologize for in an overwhelming way, or there's an opportunity to send flowers to grandma at the hospital or something like that that you wouldn't have known about otherwise, right? And and by the way, Eric, the bigger you get, the harder that is to do.
Well, right? I think one thing that Greg said there that was important is, I think, if I heard you right, is the instructors are supposed to talk to them right after class, every class. If you don't structure it so that the instructors are, we're supposed to write X number of great work cards after, at the end of the day, it's on our checklist, you know, and they have to do that. And so we're pretty good at doing that. But if you just said, hey, make sure you talk to all the parents and make sure you know what's going on, then 2 weeks come by, oh, you know, I was so busy with class, I couldn't. You got to make it a, like, this is something you do. And if you don't do it, then okay, do it. You've got to do it. You know, you got to keep pushing the guys till it becomes a habit. But that has to be
a structured
habit.
Well, it's
got to
be like he just said: is you're responsible for 2 minutes with four people per class, right? That becomes very tangible, right?
Right. Yeah. And if it's not specific and tangible, then it won't happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then it becomes a habit. You know, then they just start doing it, and they develop relationships, and they're trying to train staff on sales. They realize they're just there to talk, they're just there to find out what are the questions, and you got to guide them. You got to say, what are you going to sit down and talk to them about? Well, you got to ask them how they're doing at home, what are they thinking of the program. You know, don't bring up things that are going to be negative. You don't want to, you know, emphasize some of your faults, but at the same time, you want to get good feedback. The most important part is the follow-up mechanism.
Yeah.
They are hearing it, and they actually say that there's a problem. You got to teach them, number one, how to apologize, how to say, oh, I'm really sorry. You know, we had a couple of stupid little things come up, like somebody was pissed off that our water pressure in the boys' bathroom wasn't high enough. You know, it was one of those little things, but in Dad's mind, it was big enough that he had to bring it up to one of our instructors. So it's little things like that, then follow up to get it fixed and resolved.
Well, and from a staff training standpoint, that's the Ritz-Carlton thing, right? Is, and Four Seasons is really good about this too, but the main thing they drill into their staff is when you come across a guest problem, you solve it. It's not somebody else's problem, it's your problem, right? Like if you notice at Four Seasons, if you ask any of the staff members where something is, they always walk you there, right? And a lot of other companies have now adopted this, where they don't just point you that way. You know, I've noticed Home Depot now is good about that. Where it used to be hard, but once you get somebody, they walk you to it and find it for you, right? So they don't just, oh, three aisles over on the left. But the Ritz-Carlton thing was always just drilling in. And I forget what it was, but each employee could basically spend whatever it took to, you know, within reason to fix the problem, right? And you know, and their thing was, if a guest has a problem, it's your job to fix it. And notice what happens in most companies is, person mentions a problem to this guy, and he says, oh, here, you need to talk to them, and it's not even in his mind anymore, right? But if you empower them, once you find a problem, your mission is to fix it. And in a martial arts school, it's just as bad as it is anywhere else, you know? One of the assistant instructors, somebody mentions a problem. Well, if somebody mentions there's a problem with toilet paper in the bathroom, I want that guy to go fix the problem with the toilet paper, right? I don't want him to make a note, put it on the desk, and leave it at the receptionist. I want him just go fix it, right? But it's a real training issue. Have you got them trained now to send like a little personal note after they've talked to?
Yeah, we have. We divide up our attention in weekers, and we basically send out, hey, we miss you.
Yeah.
Personalizes from everybody, and then it gives them that responsibility.
You know, if I was going to plus it, I'd have them start sending out a personal note to everybody they talk to at the end of the night, right? So if you're going to talk to four people in class, and you have four classes and 16 people, you know, let's send a personal note out to those 16 people, right? You could systematize it by they give the card to the front desk and they hand address an envelope or something like that, and then the instructor, you know, so sorry to hear about grandma, you know, whatever, you know, let us know if there's anything. I mean, you know, just something where they reference back. You know, people are shocked even when you talk to them that you actually heard what they said and remember it, right? I mean, it seems like it's obvious, but so few people actually ever, you know, even in a conversation, listen or remember that if next time they came in, they're asking about how grandma's doing, right? I mean, they're just shocked that you remember that was mentioned. I mean, it's a pleasant, you know, a pleasant that you really do are paying attention.
It doesn't have to be a big deal. I mean, if something's wrong with grandma, then that's not good, but it's, you know, a nice thing to comment on.
Yeah.
But whatever they talk about is okay to write a note on too.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, it could be anything. Could be, well, glad to know Johnny's still doing a great job, and we're looking forward to seeing him next time.
Yeah, I mean, it could be something completely positive, you know. Yeah. Susie won this thing, and the next thing that she's going to try out for is Thursday. And then when they come back in Friday, hey, you said Susie was going to do that deal yesterday. How'd it go? Right? I mean, you know, just in... If you train the staff, like I like those blank notebooks, right? So you go buy them at Barnes & Noble and they're just, you know, blank bound. But if you train them to just like keep notes on that stuff and as a reminder, and then as you were talking about at the end of the night, everybody's talking with each other about it, then you get a pretty good information sharing going, right?
Yeah, I think that it's important to train the staff on that too, because one of the reasons when you all ran your schools like full time, you didn't have any helpers, or when I was teaching full time, didn't have any really other people. I did that automatically. You know, you guys are probably pretty good at doing that automatically because you own the business and you're better at it, or you wouldn't be here. But
well, and you have that vested interest.
Exactly. Yeah. If you don't formalize it for the staff, it's not that the staff aren't good guys, and it's not that they don't want to work, but if you want something done, you better formalize it and make it part of your system. Otherwise, they're going to forget. And they'll have a million reasons why they couldn't do it. Just like some people aren't here, they have a million reasons why they couldn't be here. You guys all came here. It's going to make your school do better in the next few months. Yeah. Coming here makes a big difference, but you're disciplined enough to do that, whereas you can't expect that out of the guys.
There was a great article I used to give everybody. I wonder if I could find it, but there's a magazine called... still in business, called Training, which is an industry magazine for corporate training departments, right? So the guy at Texaco who does corporate training and so forth, that's their target audience. But there was a great article in there one time, and it was talking about how normally when we're trying to teach trainers or teachers, that we're putting all of our emphasis on podium skills, right? Speaking skills and that type of thing. And that the reality was, other than the entertainment factor, that had a very small percentage of the impact, right? And if I look at the schools I've seen with the highest quality retention, they almost always are not the ones that you walked in and went, wow, what an exciting floor. And it's an interesting dichotomy, because we all want to make class more exciting, have more charismatic instructors, have a more dynamic environment, and then we work on class plans and let's chop it up and keep them moving and doing this. But the schools with the best retention, like another one was Will Mayer, I don't know if Will had the wackiest curriculum I've ever seen.
Ninja.
I mean, yeah, he's a ninja.
Yeah, no kidding.
No, he taught ninjutsu.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, and they're rolling around and wearing the little sneakers, and you know, and so is Stephen Hayes. But I mean, the structure of the curriculum was just wacky, right?
Yeah, it wasn't like a video game, like it wasn't like Ninja like that, but it was like
They weren't teaching invisibility, but I mean, they were rolling around, and, you know, and but I mean, he had great retention. Again, big school. Right, like 700 active, 600, 700 active pretty consistently. And I remember one of the things that he did, and we talked about it in one of the other meetings, is he had a big board, like a big rewrite board, covering like half the wall, with every student's name on it. And then every week they would update their test date, how many lessons they had, how many lessons they needed to test, and whether if they were short, how many makeup lessons they needed. And, I mean, there's a lot easier way to do this, but they had it up on one big board all the way across the room. And then every class, the instructor, one at a time, would walk the students over and say, now, Billy, your test is on such and such date. You're three lessons behind. We've got to catch up the three lessons. Let's go talk to Mom and see what our schedule is. I mean, it was kind of that level of attention to detail, if that makes sense. And there's probably 10 other systems that were like that, but it was that level of detail and never let anybody slip through the cracks, right? I think like my daughter's middle school. You know, anytime she's late to anything and their system is about halfway screwed up, but like every it seems like some weeks, every week I'm getting a call where it's a machine calling. Hi, this is Dunstan Middle School, and your daughter Jada Oliver, which the machine never pronounces right, was marked tardy for period 3-4, right? But at a certain level, you need to think in terms of being that on top of their attendance, and that on top of where they are on track, and that on top of what's going on. And there's all kinds of ways to systematize that. Most of it isn't about automation, right? So the more you have it, the big thing on the wall that you're tracking, or it's on their ID card, but it's systematizing having the conversation with them every class, whether they're ahead of schedule or behind schedule, whether they're on track, what their test date is, all of that kind of thing. Does that make sense? Good. Is that good, Eric, or is there something to expand from there?
And then the distinction between Buzz and Hafner, very similar?
Yeah.
Anything different? Was there any difference between the two?
Well, there are personality differences. Not a lot. I mean, completely different curriculums. You know, Keith is a very traditional Taekwondo school, and Buzz is a very traditional Wee Chi Ru school. Buzz has this beautiful building that he built on a separate property. It's kind of out in the sticks. So it's like this, freestanding building. And in the building, in fact, there's a tour of his site if you go to buzzdurkin.com. He has a horrible website that he's very proud of. It's been there forever. But there's like a virtual tour of the school. So it's one of these schools that has beautiful wood floors, and he has elegantly framed black belt diplomas for everybody who's ever gotten their black belt. And Buzz, by the way, we were doing a call one day, and he had to run because he had like 35 people on a Tuesday at 11 a.m. in his fifth degree and up black belt class. It's just... Once he's got them enrolled, he not only keeps them, but then their kids and then the grandkids. It's that kind of environment. Hafner physical facility is the complete opposite. It's in downtown Ann Arbor, which is a college town. The school is in the basement. It's underneath the coffee shop. It's kind of like you walk into the coffee shop and there's a door on the right and you go downstairs. And where Buzz's school is impeccable, Keith's school is kind of dingy. Where Buzz is this elegant property on its own, Keith is downtown Ann Arbor. In Keith's case, I was there one time and they had a flyer that said Ninja Parking Skills. And I said, what the hell is that? I said, well, we only have one parking space. So, and they have meter parking. But, this really tells them how to find a parking, how to find a place to park. And, a lot of them will drive around forever, but if you go down, two blocks and then take a right, there's a public parking lot. So really it was telling them, how to find someplace to park. You've probably talked, I've talked to several people whose biggest excuse for failure is that they don't have enough parking, and they need to get a spot that is, you know, a bigger parking lot because
they don't know other countries. I mean, I was just in South America, and there's 200 schools there. They're all doing really well, or many of them are doing really well. Yeah. And they have zero parking. I mean, if you're going to park there, you go down the road, or it's very expensive.
Yeah,
it's like parking in Manhattan. Yeah. Like in every city there, they just don't. They don't have big parking lots.
So they don't complain, they'll just park.
They just do it. Now, culturally, I understand that's a little bit something they're used to. If you're in Houston or Phoenix and you don't have a parking lot, it may be a little different situation than if you're in Manhattan, but it's still something you can manage. That's a good example of managing it, though, that they actually have a flyer, so when you come in, maybe they might email that to somebody before they come in for their first lesson.
Yeah.
You know, to make sure that they understand, or say on the phone, you know, by the way, parking in that part of town is really at a premium. Here's a good place to park. Make sure you show up a couple minutes early so you have time to be there.
And telling them on the info call and telling them to enroll and everything else. You know, something else, to give you an example of something that Keith was doing one time, is, you know, for a while there was a trend of schools trying to do like 16-page, full-color, student newsletters trying to imitate, you know, Kaiser Permanente or something like that, right? And I remember in Keith's case, what he was doing is printing off like maybe a legal size sheet of paper, but it was two-sided on red paper or yellow paper or something. But it was like the weekly update, right? And the weekly update, what they would do, which was interesting to give you a sense of the mindset. So here they have 600, let's say 80 students. They had run mailing labels for everybody in the school. Then they'd put a mailing label on each one of that person. And then when you came to class, they would hand you the weekly update. And then at the end of the week, everybody who hadn't been in to get handed the weekly update, they'd put it in an envelope and mail it. Right? Now think about how that's different from what most of us would do, right? Myself included. We want to hand this thing out. I'm going to do a big stack of them, and everybody hands out. I'm going to, you know. But in their case, this is yours. See, there's your name. I'm going to hand it to you, and I'm going to walk you through it. And there was just that extra little level of making sure it didn't get lost in the shuffle. Okay? Now, to give it like the, you know, the overwhelming marketer's version of that, my version of it would have been they get 12 emails, 2 texts, 2 postcards, and the, you know, and the 2 handouts, right? I mean, but truthfully, either one works. The hand on the shoulder, looking them in the eye, and walking them through it is always the best approach. That's what we were talking about at lunch, by the way. You know, where a lot of these things fall apart is an instructor gets up in front of a classroom and announces it to everybody and skips the part of going down the line, putting the hand on the shoulder, making eye contact, and saying, Billy's going to be at the Halloween party on Friday, isn't he? Well, we really have, well, what time is that over? Oh, well, that's plenty of time. Billy, you'd like to be there. I mean, and you know, the party starts at 6:30, but if you're up there by 7:15, that's just fine, right? And if you don't have that one-on-one conversation, nothing happens, right? And it's, again, I was having the conversation with one of our peak performers, and he's doing a renewal blitz. And I said, well, okay, what happened? He's got 150 people, and he had 3 renewals. It's like, well, no, we're supposed to, you know, worst case scenario is half, and really about 75% would be what we're targeting. You know, what the hell went wrong? I said, send me everything you sent them. He sends me over 1 email. I'm like, well, okay, but what else did you send them? No, that's what we sent them. Had a 50% open rate. Well, okay. 50% open rate isn't very good. But, I mean, if you're doing a renewal, you know, my version of renewal blitz is there's going to be the big package of stuff twice a week that they're going to get. All the parents are going to be sitting down. They're going to be reading it in class. They're going to get the big priority mail envelope with a package of stuff. They're going to get 2 or 3 postcards in the mail a week. They're going to get 2 emails a day, right? I mean, it's going to be, you know, everywhere they look. plus the school is going to be decorated, and you're going to have to duck under the signs to get in the, I mean, literally the sign will be here, and you have to duck under to get in so you can't miss it. I mean, it's all that kind of stuff. And in order to really get a communication going with somebody, you've both got to hit them from all different angles, but you've also got to make eye contact and talk to them one-on-one, or else nothing happens, right? You know, from a practical standpoint, Eric, I can't think of anything that would be like a contrast between the two. I think if you, you know, and we saw your class there at your school, I don't think you would, as a martial artist coming in, be overwhelmingly impressed with the dynamicism, charisma, or even curriculum of what either one of them were teaching. And perhaps not even of student quality. I'm not saying either one of them is bad, but it's not the secret sauce, right? And again, if I contrasted that with you know, like Steve LaValle, when his operation was going strongest, he had the most dynamic floor of anybody I've ever seen. Never had particularly great retention numbers. He had the incredibly good students, excellent curriculum, the most dynamic and exciting floor, organized, you know, class plans, charismatic instructors. All of the instructors were cut from exactly the same cloth. I mean, they were all on top of their game, and Buzz's retention was probably 400% better, right? He had a lot of flow in the door and such a charismatic environment, it was sucking people in, and did quite a few things to be on top of the retention, but it was never at the level of Will or Buzz or Keith. To the best of my knowledge, never got close to that point. The other example of that would be like Ernie Reyes' schools in West Coast. And again, they have an extremely dynamic floor. And I truthfully don't remember what their attrition rate was. It's been a long time since I've looked at their numbers. But they weren't, you know, they weren't bad, but they weren't great. And they were better than Steve's, mostly because, with very few exceptions, the quality of the personal relationship that the West Coast people had was much higher level than it was with LaValle's organization. Less ego, more just nice people, more bonding with the student appropriately. And so, truthfully, I think that's the secret sauce, is if you hire people who are highly athletically talented, but who aren't extremely personable and concerned, you got a problem. And that doesn't mean you can't have nice people who are talented, but a lot of the ones that are highly talented are also narcissists. And so the narcissist, it just never works long term.
I noticed that about we've gotten some students from the Ernie Reyes' schools.
Yeah.
And you know, it seems like they're nice guys, but they focus on flashy styles. And you kind of imply curriculum doesn't matter. I think this is kind of the counter case, where curriculum matters a little bit if the curriculum or what you're teaching them is flashy or hard for the average person. Then that reduces retention. And flashy's good if you're super athletic and you're a good talent, but we often don't get the most talented people in martial arts, especially from a kid's point of view. We don't get the super talented 10-year-olds are playing football or basketball, because those are the high visibility sports. If they're very, very talented, we get more the average kids and the, you know, kids that have issues going on. So
ones that are klutzes.
Yeah. And
well, that was definitely me.
Well, yeah, and I think in Ernie Reyes' case, and what I was surprised at, he had two students in particular came, and they were fantastic, you know, flashy guys. I mean, you watch them do stuff, and they, wow, you guys can kick high, and you can do all this stuff. And when my guys would spar them, they'd beat the crap out of them, you know, because we actually did fight, and they didn't really fight. So they kind of weren't learning something practical. It seemed like, you know, I don't have any good data on this, but it seemed like what they were teaching, in a sense, wasn't very practical. So they, you know, maybe people are only going to do that if they want to, like, you know, how, if you want to do something flashy and really cool and exciting, that's a small portion of the population. But to keep somebody for a long time, it's got to really feel like it's kind of a good thing for you to do for the long term, if that makes sense. Like, you know, like you don't go to Disneyland every day, but you might go to the gym every day. You know, Disneyland's awesome, but, you know, in small doses, if you do it all the time, it would get boring. And maybe that's kind of, I think in terms of curriculum and how we teach, you know, if we focus on super fancy flashy, I've never seen that really work that well. There was that other kid we talked to that wanted to add Zumba and all that. Remember right. him and his dad? There's one kid that we talked to who goes across every weekend, does tournaments, and all the students want to do tournaments and everything. And, you know, I'm sure his students love him and all 25 students that he has, you know, or 40 students that he has. Yeah, but, you know, they won't pay him a lot of money. That's not worth a lot of money either. You know, flashy, kind of exciting isn't really worth too much unless you're going to be a movie star. So, but in our field, sometimes that looks like it's the thing because that's what movie stars do.
Well, that's probably the comparison between more so, you know, like the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu schools versus the Taekwondo schools or something. There's more of a contrast with that. And, you know, I mean, Eric, the probably the most impressive thing at your school is just how friendly everyone was and how much rapport there was. And if you contrast that with, what was the name of that school? The guy from San Diego. Were you there at the Hotel Dell when he was there? But what was the name? The Arena MMA. And they had this big, active school, and they were doing 60, 70 enrollments a month and had like 800 active. But it wasn't like yours where even a big number of people, but it was a family, and they're all supportive, and they're, you know, everybody's friendly, introducing each other. It was like 19 different instructors, and everything's going, you know, going on crazy, and you know, churning them and burning them. I mean, it a complete contrast, right? And, you know, it, as you know, there probably is a schism on your side, too, with the ones who think of themselves as MMA tend a little bit more towards, like, the Arena thing, where they operate more like a gym, where the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu schools tend to be, you know, closer to where you're at, right? But even within that schism, the more you gravitate towards it's a school and it's a curriculum and you're really, really recognizing and nurturing them, you know, it makes a huge impact on the results, right? The other contrast is that Krav school in San Antonio, where you weren't with us.
I didn't go to that.
That was Jeff Smith.
Oh, that's the one that the Mr. Clark went to, too.
Yeah. In fact, that's how I met the guy. It's Bill Clark and Jeff Smith and I went there. But, you know, he's got like 3,000 people going through.
He runs it like a health club. Like it's a.
He's a health club
low,
guy. Yeah.
Low dollar amount, you know.
Yeah. High turnover, pricing so that they're not going to cancel the EFT. Schedule wise, guys, why don't we take a 5 or 7 minute restroom break and then maybe power through to about 7? Does that sound like a reasonable timeline? So let's take 5, and then we'll wrap up about 7.
Okay.
And hopefully the bus is going to show up in the morning.
You might want to put a file, save as.
Yeah, something's going on. It's like going crazy.
Exactly.
I can just hit Control S, right?
But it's not giving you a name of
the
thing.
Yeah, it has a name.
Did you already give it a name?
Get a Mac. Let's see, what do we got?
It moved a bunch of stuff. It took this out of where it was and moved it someplace else, and took this out of where it was and moved it down about here.
Maybe you placed the control cut and control.
Well, I didn't. All I was doing was sitting here typing, and all of a sudden it did. It's done that a couple of times.
Can't say what's going on. But as long as you keep on saving it, at least you'll have the last. Stop banging on it, it's going to get managed. Maybe one
oh,
man.
Yeah.
Oh, you okay? Don't forget. what I said. The first day of these trips, man, all I want to do is go to bed.
Say that again.
First day of these trips, all I want to do is go to bed.
Yeah, right.
Get in late, can't sleep.
I don't know how to, like, highlight something and then move it or anything like that. Do you know how to do that without a mouse?
Well, you got a mouse, that little thing's a mouse.
Well, no, it don't work like a mouse.
Okay.
A mouse, you go like this, and you pick it up here. I got no idea how to do it, do you?
Well, you use the button on the left as the mouse button.
Oh, really? So
I use two hands. I hold.
Let's say I want to take this whole part here.
Yeah, so you get the first letter, hold down the thing, bring it across.
Hold this
across,
thing?
Hold down the button.
Through here?
There you
oh,
go.
Man. That helps. Okay, now then how do I move it?
Well, you control. You can do one of two things. You can control X, which cuts it.
Okay.
And then you put it where you want it, and you can control V, and it'll bring it there.
Okay. I'm glad it fits right. Now I just have to find it.
For whatever reason, I lost 6 pages of email.
Just here?
It's completely gone. Yep.
They even told you had mail, too.
Yeah.
It lied.
I don't have mail anymore.
It lied.
Turn my audio down after that.
Mm. I hadn't heard you got mail in a long time. I didn't even know they.
I turned it down.
I didn't hear.
Oh,
yes,
yeah.
Well, the actual statement. You know, back since that movie, you got mail. Didn't know they should have just folded it.
This is not right.
Sunday is going to be 52 degrees, but the low is 34 degrees. So
I'm trying to find this. I'm sorry.
Good. No problem.
Of course, now that you got interrupted, what did it say? Oh, what?
It'll be cold Monday. Sunday.
Monday.
Get up
oh, okay.
Sunday. It'll be in the 50s and below that.
I think something got deleted here. Damn. Okay, this is the part I don't like about computers. It never deletes my notes here. Okay, is there a way of finding out what got deleted, or do I have to get rid of everything I did since I deleted it to find it?
No way of where you saved it in between. If you saved it.
I didn't save it, I suppose.
There it
unless
is.
It saves itself on Mac.
There is a control Z button that goes back.
And you can see it?
Well, yeah, it'll go back to what it was before. In other words,
but if
say,
it didn't
say,
automatically
say
automatically save it.
No, it's not saving involved. It's part of the process. You say
right.
So
so
say you type the word
the
THE, you hit control Z, it'll take the THE out of it.
Will it take it back one letter at a time?
I don't know. I think it's
Control Z, and
control
it won't get
Z.
Rid of anything?
I'm not promising anything.
Okay.
Say, so if you copy and move something, it's going to go back and put a word back where it was before.
Yeah, but, you know, I just want to go find this, the whole part.
Okay, that was a refreshing.
Oh, God.
Okay, we got a good... Okay, but there's the recorder ran during our break, and then I paused it for a minute during the break, and then forgot to turn it back on once we were talking. Probably a few of those comments. That's probably the same. There are a lot of them, Jeff. That if you ask them, would it be possible for you to write a check for $28,000 to pay for this lesson? They would say no. But if you approach it differently, you can walk them through how they could do it and why it'd be in their best interest. Okay? And I have a predisposition on these things. Let's talk about several of them. If you look at your target growth of the school, Eric, if you had your ideal number in the next few months, what kind of monthly growth would you like your main school to be? Monthly. Yeah. 120. Okay. So one predisposition that I have, and this is from pretty good documentation, is if you're averaging 120 a month, I'd like to see the billing component of it. In other words, the monthly EFT, however you're doing, billing company, whatever, I'd like to see that be 50 to 60%. Okay? So if I had my ideal world to do 120, I'd have this be 60 up to maybe 80,000. And the other 60 to 40 to 60 would be cash in-house. In other words, down payments, paid in fulls, all that kind of stuff, right? Now, the reason I say that is anytime I've seen a school that goes much over 60%, they're always leaving money on the table. Meaning that if they started doing bigger down payments, started doing more paid in full, started doing, you know, pay it in full over 2 or 3 months rather than over 36 months, their overall gross is a lot lower, right? Use LaValle as an example. When I got him to start focusing more on this, he went from doing, overnight, went from doing 60,000 a month to 100,000, right? Is it made an immediate jump in his gross that was sustainable? I mean, it wasn't like he had a good month or two. It sustained itself at a much higher revenue forever, right? On the flip side, we were talking about the mass training thing, right? Is a lot of the mass training guys ended up on the opposite side, where, let's say, 80% of their growth was over here in cash in-house, and they hadn't built up the building. And that's also death. But what happens with that is, When you're doing that it that way, you'll hit some record months and pull in a ton of cash, but then as soon as you have a bad month, you know, you've got real problems. And you have 2 or 3 bad months in a row and you're really a problem. So you can never have a bad month or a bad quarter on new enrollment flow, because then it's a disaster. Does that make sense? The other piece of that is I always want to make sure that 100% of the expenses, including your payroll, right? So this is payroll, advertising, rent, you know, insurance, utilities, everything. But, of course, these are the three ones, right? So advertising, payroll, and rent. But I want to make sure everything is covered 100% when the billing hits, so that anything that comes in internal is profit, right? So if I've got, you know, whatever the number is, if I've got $50,000 a month in overhead, I want to make sure the billing is at least 50, right? So the day and again, doesn't matter whether you're using software to do it or a billing company or whatever, but the minute the EFTs hit, all the bills are paid, right? That way you're never living hand to mouth. The other predisposition I have, and this one can be argued from either side, right? So if you put me in the room with Bill Clark and Jeff Smith, right? And I mean, Jeff Smith, you know, works with me. But they would both argue the opposite point of what I'm going to say. And and they have a logical reason for saying this. But in my mind, I like to do it this way, which is I enroll you for that first 12 months. And it's just a trial enrollment where I'm going to do this quick start, hand-holding, renewal prep process, right? And when I do the 12 months, I don't like to have that be paid in full. I would much rather it be you paid me $500 to begin with, and then you're paying me a couple hundred dollars a month. And then, preferably before this first payment hits, or within the first month or two, I'm going to be flipping it into a leadership renewal. And I'll take as many of the leadership renewal Does that make sense? And what I see a lot of times is when people start focusing on doing cash, is they're like cashing everybody out for 6 months. You know, I don't want them to write me a check for $800. I want them to write me a check for $30,000, right?
It's almost counterproductive, because then when you go to try to get the money for the other one, you, I like to use the rule, you can only, rule of thumb, and just ask for money twice. You ask for once at the beginning, you ask for once at the upgrade, and that should cover it. If you do the paid in full at the basic, it kind of is like, yeah, you're kind of using up two of your options.
Well, and as I said, both Bill Clark and Jeff Smith would argue the opposite. They would argue if they pay in full for the enrollment, they'll pay in full more easily for the renewal. I've always felt, and this is from like doing a thousands of them belly to belly, I've always felt that giving them any reason to think I don't have to talk to you again about this thing for a year is counterproductive. And, you know, and I hate hearing the, although it's kind of like the parent objection you talked to, there's an easy way around it, but I hate hearing the, well, I've already paid you until this time next year, you know, why are you talking to me again, right? I hate to hear that from somebody. So I've always done better by just setting up the enrollment on monthly and then getting as high a percentage of the leadership people paid in full as possible. Now, when it comes to that, my pricing logic, the way I came up with my pricing logic was, to begin with, was I made an assumption that we were going to get about a third of the renewals paid in full. And two-thirds of the renewals, we had at least a 50% bump in payment. Now, run the math on that. If I have three deals, one of which zeroed out their payment altogether, two of which had a 50% bump in payment, what that means is I can do a third of all of the renewals paid in full and have zero effect on the bill. Right? Does that make sense? In practical terms, we ended up gravitating towards this being even higher. And so, therefore, there was a net positive from the renewals, even with a third paid in full, and no, you know, no cashing out of the balances. Does everybody see why I'm saying that? Because what would happen a lot of times is the schools that would focus on cash, all of a sudden their billing is going like this, right? You don't want the billing to go like this. You want the billing to go like this, right? But you also want to do all of the other revenue. And so my logic was, as long as the ones that renewed monthly and the cumulative of that was more than what was lost, and lost losing the payment on the initial year enrollment, plus not getting a payment on the renewal, right? So that was my original logic, and so it was all built upon one-third, two-thirds. A third would pay in full, two-thirds would pay monthly. And what I've seen over the years is what that ratio is, going back to what you said, Simon, has been greatly impacted by two things. One is if it was in a rich area town or a less rich area town. And then number two, what was happening in the credit markets, right? And so I hate to externalize any of this stuff, but there was a long period of time, and it's coming back. Long period of time, as long as you could like fog a mirror, you could go get a credit card for $30,000, right? And we didn't have any merchant account problems with running the $30,000 card. And by the way, Jeff Cole, who we lined up to do the credit cards, the reason we lined him up was because he can manage the risk department and mitigate some of those problems. You and I talked about that recently. So if you aren't using him, I would at least go get an additional account with Jeff. And
who's this? I haven't heard of them.
What's that? Yeah, it's up on the website.
Okay.
Oh, contact information.
Yeah, if you go on the website, it says accept credit cards or something like that. That's Jeff Cole. So, and we don't have any particular relationship with him other than I was seeking somebody out during the height of the credit crisis, because it was a common problem that, I mean, even like big down payments were being problematic, right? I think I had Lloyd had one day where the credit card company held $65,000.
I had one too.
Yeah.
$8,080.
Yeah. Well, I had them hold a $30,000 deal, and I think worst cases I had them hold $50,000 or $60,000 that we did in a weekend, and that's when I started looking at somebody who could deal with that stuff and manage it. But does all this make sense so far? So if you start looking at it, but again, how is it? If they can't write a check, how would they come up with it, right? Well, let's say you're talking about the kids market or in the adult market. A lot of people don't have that much money in their checking account, but they have investments. They have an IRA, they have 401k, they have investments in stocks, one thing or another that's all fairly liquid, right? But if you're giving them a big enough cash discount, what's happening is their other investments are making squat, right? So last few years are making, what, 2 or 3%. The stock market has done better now. But if they're, you know, something equivalent to cash, they're not making much. The market has been soaring until recently it started crashing again. But, you know, a lot of times they're sensitive to that. And then if you show them, well, if you do it this way, the equivalent return is much better than you're making anywhere else. Then they'd be willing to do it, right? The other example was, you know, piecing it together on 4 credit cards, 5 credit cards, 1 credit card. The other example is the one I used a minute ago, which is, you know, mom can't afford the payment, but her mother will afford the payment, so they borrow it. We used to have a credit union that we worked with a lot, and we just had their brochure on the desk. We had a business card of the sales rep, and after we wrapped it up on monthly, we'd give them that and say, you know, you really would be better off to, you know, you could do a HELOC, home equity line of credit. You could go do a HELOC. They're going to do that for 3 or 4% APR, and we'll give you a $5,000 discount. So you'd be much better off to just go have them do this, and then they can write a check for it. Oh, wow, I didn't know that. So we'd give them the credit union, you know, brochure and the card, and then we'd call the guy and say, you know, they're interested in doing that, and fax over the information. So there are a lot of different ways to break the barrier, but in having the conversation with them is, you know, it'll be, you know, again, a child or adult, but, you know, if it's adult, you say, well, a lot of our students prefer just to do one payment. There's a significant cash discount, and then you don't have a monthly payment at all. And obviously, most people aren't able to just write a check for whatever. But you could do one of several things. You put on a credit card. You put on 1, 4, 5 credit cards. You know, if you have money in a 401k or other investments, it's going to be a much higher return, the savings you're going to get with the discount, than what you're getting anywhere else. You know, the third choice, a lot of people end up doing home equity line of credit or something like that, and then that's a much cheaper way to do something like that, and you still save $5,000-$6,000. So you start giving them options, right? And Greg, you were talking about the script to get more of them to do it. And when you're asking for cash, there's two approaches, right? One approach is present the full amount with the cash discount. And then if they can't do that, to back down to the monthly. I've always preferred the opposite, which is I get the deal done, down payment, monthly payment, without discussing the full cash price. And then go back to it, and the language is, oh, by the way. You know, Jeff Smith did that on one of our calls recently. His language is a little different than I've always used, but it's about the same idea, right? Oh, by the way, I forgot to mention, a lot of our parents would prefer to save $5,000. Would you like to do that? Well, of course. Well, the way you would do that is we can do the balance on credit card or combination of credit cards or write a check or, you know, home equity line of credit or something like that, we give you a significant cash discount for doing that. It's a significant savings. Oh, well, how much would that be? $28,900 versus $36,000, whatever the number is. So it'd be, $8,000 savings.
I think a key point, though, is if your term is too short, if you're not doing at least 3 years, and your dollar amount is too low, then the savings drops so much that it's not precipitously, saving $5,000 on a $30,000 deal is a big savings, but saving $900 on a $3,000 deal might even be a higher percentage. I don't know. I wasn't trying to do my math. It could even be a higher percentage, but it's not as attractive as saving like $3,000 or $4,000 or $5,000. So that makes a big difference. So that's another good reason about pricing, making the right pricing decisions, because otherwise you're paying full amounts. I was talking to somebody the other day and they were doing 12-month contracts.
Yeah.
And well then, you save $500-$600. Who cares?
Paid in full $100 a month for 12 months, who cares? I'd rather them do the $1,200 of the down payment.
Right.
And then a monthly from there. But that makes sense so far, Greg? And then the next element of it is that a lot of times they'll say, well, heck, I'd hate to put it on a credit card and pay that much interest. And so the follow-up to that is, well, absolutely, I understand what you're saying. What we're giving you is the equivalent of 18% APR plus an additional 10%. So even if you paid the interest on the credit card, which is probably, 12% nowadays, even after you paid the interest on the credit card, if you, carried it out the same full term, you're still saving over $3,000.
Could you repeat that, please? I didn't follow. Because I'm having trouble doing this and getting people to put it on credit cards. Are you charging finance charge to people?
No.
I think Jeff Smith is. He's saying about 18% finance.
No, it's just, you explain it. But.
Yeah, well, it's all in the language, right? See, if I'm doing a computation of put it on your credit card or pay us billing, right? What are the advantages of the credit card? Well, if I give you a big enough cash discount, and it's not very hard for me to do, right? Because if I'm paying 18% interest, really I'm paying 1.5%, right? Most credit cards nowadays are going to be, 12% or 10% or something like that. They're not, they're not 18%. And this is also the, sometimes they'll say, well, I can give you the money in December when I get my Christmas bonus. I can give the money to you in January when you get the Christmas bonus. And my fallback will always be, why don't you put it on the credit card, pay it off on the credit card? Why don't we pay the interest on the credit card? Well, what if we paid the interest on the credit card? You would do that? Yeah, that's fine. Well, what am I talking about? Well, if you put it on now and you're going to pay it in January, you have 30 days float, so there's no interest. And then you have, if the interest rate is 18%, you have 3%. Am I willing to, pay, if it's a $30,000 cash deal, am I willing to pay 3% of a $30,000 cash deal in order to have it today rather than hope for it in 3 months? Yeah, right? Because guess what? A lot can happen between now and 3 months, Well, I was going to give you that when I got my Christmas bonus, but we didn't get a Christmas bonus this year. I was going to give it when I get the Christmas bonus. Instead, I got a pink slip in my, thing, and I got, right? So going back, I always present it as a cash discount is the equivalent of 18% APR plus an additional 10%. I do that for a very specific reason. Is a huge percentage of the cash deals I've done over the years were on credit cards, right? And the biggest objection they had is they think their credit card's at a high interest rate, right? Which they're right, but our cash discount is even better. So I'll present it like that. And then they say, well, yeah, but I'm paying, I'm giving you 18% APR plus an additional 10%. And here's the advantage. See, if we set it up monthly, it's going to be $350 a month, every month. You have a good month and you want to pay more. $350. If you have a bad month, you don't want to pay $350, it's still $350. On the credit card, you can pay, you know, pay the minimum one month, you can pay it off the next. You know, you're totally flexible because it's a revolving line of credit. Number two is we're still going to give you, you're still going to, even if you pay the 18% for the whole thing, you're still getting an extra $3,000 savings. And
so even if you pay it off over the term that we give you, if it's a three-year term or whatever, if you pay monthly, what essentially happens too, and you can present this, is if it was $200 a month to the school, they could pay $180 a month to the credit card for 3 years, and they would still save money because you're paying their interest plus you're giving them a discount.
Right.
So if they want to have the lowest payment, just pay it off on your credit card and then pay them. The worst case is you pay $180 a month, and then you're still saving money. It saves you $20 a month. Plus, you get the points and the mileage.
Right, exactly.
And we have a worksheet that we figured that out on. We have like a little, so it shows the pay amount. We show the 18% discount, which I'm anal about that. I probably shouldn't have been that way. But like if somebody was paying in full and they had 30 months, you're laughing at me about this. If they had 30 months, we gave them the appropriate 18% APR. So you just gave them 18%. We actually calculate, so it's less.
Do you have that?
Yeah, I have it. You can email me.
Don't get that complicated.
Yeah, it's probably better just to do it this way.
Here's what happens.
I'm the type of person, you're telling me this stuff, and I don't follow. I've got to see
it. I'll explain it more clearly. But a confused prospect does nothing.
No.
So if you give it to the...
No, I don't show them the chart.
Okay.
I just give them the 18... It says 18% APR on the thing, and I show them the dollar amount.
A confused staff member fucks up everything.
No.
Okay, so...
Yeah. It's true. It's true.
Yeah. How are they going to feel? So are you really giving them 28% off that, off the balance? Because you're saying 18 plus 10.
Yeah, basically a
30%. So they're getting 30%. That's, oh.
That's why your dollar amount has to be high enough and your term has to be high enough so you're still preserving.
Now, I'm not
going to
do that on a 12-month enrollment. But, you know, if you're talking about 4 or 5 years at, you know, 500 a month, right?
See, these guys giving 10%. We just talked to somebody the other day giving a 10% discount on pay in full. It's like, why bother? You know, it's not enough for me to. In fact, it's a dumb deal for me to get a 10% discount.
The 10% discount works just fine for the ones who are making $300,000, and it's just, you know, okay, fine, just put it on the Amex, right? But that's been a very small percentage of the cash deals I've done over the years, right? I would say there are very few who weren't feeling a lot of pain at the moment that they wrote the check, right? Or you know, maybe not pain is the right word, but they, you know, it was a lot of money to them, right? And in fact, the ones who were richer, sometimes it was actually harder to get them, you know, to part with it, to tell you the truth. But see, this is all about why you should do it on the credit card, but it's also why you should do it out of the kids' college fund. Or why you should do it out of your IRA, right? Because if you have an investment fund, you don't want to take it out of there because I'm earning a return on that and I'm saving. Well, you're earning 5%. I mean, in this case, we're giving you 18% plus 10%. So over the period of time, you would have earned $700, but you're saving $4,300, right? So the way I'm talking about this kind of nonchalantly is pre-thought out sales strategy. Okay? In a sales presentation, I'm always talking in round numbers, approximates, more or less. I'm never getting into detail. Because the more detail you get into, the more confused most people get. And then as they start to get confused, then they just don't do anything, right? And so I'm always trying to keep it very, and one is body language and voice tone, right? I used to train the staff. I would have them train, and we're doing the enrollment presentation. I'd say, well, the initial tuition normally is $600,000. Since you enrolled today, we give you a $300,000 discount, so it's only $300,000 initially. The monthlies, $197,000 a month. So we would do $497 now and then $197 a month. Is that going to work fine with the budget? and I'd have them role play, you know, 197,000 a month, 197 million, you know, what, just to desensitize them to, right? And then when they're saying, you know, 197 a month, it's like, you know, no big deal. But you want your tone, body language, everything when you're talking about money to not change from talking about anything else. You want it to be completely nonchalant. You want it all to be round numbers. You know, you don't want to get into a lot of depth and detail. But you do want to give them the logic of, I've got money over here that's earning interest. Why should I, you know, why should I pay you with it? I've got money over here that I can draw on a line of credit. Why would I want to give it to you? Because I'm going to have to pay interest. And so you want to give them that that presentation.
Can I? Yeah, I would also add on to the complexity thing, because I agree 100% that complexity kills your sales. It's really tough, and we've seen some people lately where I ask, well, what are you presenting? And they show the presentation sheet, and it, you know, has the pricing on it, but then it'll have all the family membership price, the discount if they do this, the testing fees, and then they have another page that has all their gear costs. And I'm like, well, do you actually present all this stuff at the same time? Well, yes, because we want to make sure everybody knows about any hidden costs. And that's the dumbest thing you could possibly do, because it just confuses people. And I mean, you know, sorry if anybody in the room gives all that stuff out, but, you know,
stop it right now.
Yeah. But, and it's hard to beat that out of people that, well, yeah, but what if they ask me later and we didn't tell them what gear? I'm like, there's nothing. I mean, you guys bought, you didn't think that this was free, right? Actually, it was free. This place is pretty nice. It was a very nice surprise when it was free, but I didn't expect it to be free. Yeah, down there, they were so nice. This place is cool. Anyway.
They were great last
time. Yeah, yeah. So,
answer the phone, by the way.
Well, everybody's got their...
When we lined this up the first time, it took 6 months of trying to call before we ever got hold of a sales rep. And almost any time, day or night, you get the voicemail. And the front desk only answers their phone until 5 p.m. Eastern, which is 3 o'clock Mountain Time.
Yeah. But anyway, what you present to people should be simple, and then when you explain it, like, I don't have any of the pay in full amounts. I just do exactly what Master Oliver's doing, which is you do the monthly, you take care of that. Then, oh, by the way, and then we write down, like, first grade math. I always try to explain it like first grade math. Here's your thing, and here's your thing, and you can save this. Would that be better? And then if there's another option, we just do it later. We don't present, like, we're very big into systems, but so some people take that to mean everything's all printed out and laminated on a piece of paper or on an iPad. Like, I have my iPad used for presentations, but not for this stuff, because it's got to be simple. It's got to be really simple and presented.
and even in that other example, if you wanted to present, if you're charging all this stuff, right, you've got an association fee, you've got an exam fee, if you wanted to present that with everybody, you'd be much better to present that, you know, and again, over the term of your enrollment, all of the other stuff is going to probably add up to about $20 a month, right, or 30, well, you know, whatever it is.
And I don't think that's even that important. Yeah. I think you do the monthly.
Well,
and then
no,
you explain
later. At the enrollment conference, I wouldn't get into any of that stuff.
Or right? After they enroll, or at, you know, yeah. And that's not, you know, it's not that big a deal. It's much better to do the sale first, make sure they're committed.
Well,
otherwise, it's confusing.
Our standard contract discloses everything under the sun in the contract too, right? Which of course nobody ever reads, and that's another mistake. You sit them down and try to get them to read it. You know, here, let me get you to okay at here and here and here. What am I signing? You know, you're signing that you're going to pay $197 a month for 12 months, and you just gave me $400. Huh? In the written agreement, I mean, you know, disclose everything.
We sent out that membership update form that I did right a while ago. You've got the contract for basic, and that's on a legal piece of paper, and then the membership upgrade form is just noting the changes. So the changes from 12 months to 36 or 48, the change is that, you know, they're paying this new amount.
I don't remember.
Yeah, we sent it out at one call a while ago, and we talked about upgrades.
Okay. Is it possible to send that out again?
Yeah, just email me, and I could send it, or we can send it from the thing.
If you'll send me all that stuff, I'll just have Merrick put up on the website.
Okay.
So we don't have to reinvent the wheel every time. Yeah, any of that kind of stuff that you can't find, just remind me, and we'll get some samples and put them on the website.
But then it's really simple. The first person to ever do it. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
What was the presentation at the time?
It was like for the beginner program, it would be for 12 months. Mm-hmm. Right? And it would be, start out with a monthly payment of $200, where you could pay for it in three payments, so $350, or a single payment of $1,200 and save yourself $180. And then I would just sit in there, put my finger on that one, and say, which one would be better for you?
Mm-hmm.
And they, many times, they pick the higher price one.
Right, sure.
But, you know, then when, and then...
Well, in practical terms, that's the lowest priced one.
And then, and then 2 months later, then we would renew them into the Black Belt Club program, and then, of course, the price with the time frame is doubled, tripled, you know, and then we would... The same thing, and it was amazing how many people chose to pay it in full because mm-hmm. of the savings.
Sure.
What was the down payment?
I don't remember. It's like, there was always a registration fee for everything. Mm-hmm. Registration fee didn't really do anything. It's a registration fee.
Yeah, to get started.
That's our accounting.
Yeah.
Yeah, we try not to justify that. Like a lot of people, we worry about that down payment. We'll let them giving stuff that equates to this dollar amount if they bought it separately. And that just, if you try to justify that, it just makes things more complicated. And
yeah, I mean, you can say it's $500 initially to get started, and then it's, you know, $247 a month. Well, what's the $500 for? Well, to get started.
Remember,
Yeah.
Guy.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that just wiped me out there. I know that Denver has a team that's pretty good.
His kid came into my school in Cherry Hill, and the mom came in the very first time, and he never saw the parents after. Mm-hmm. Ever. He came there in a Rolls Royce every day by a chauffeur,
mm-hmm.
and then dropped him off. And every time they said, just tell me how much.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they always just wrote out big checks.
Our version years ago of that was Marvin Davis, who was, remember the movie Pretty Woman? Among other things, he owned that hotel, and he also owned Paramount Pictures. But he lived in Denver. And his bodyguard was one of my black belts, who was a former Lakewood police officer. And so this 230-pound former cop black belt would pull up in the stretch limo with these two scrawny little kids. It was the grandkids. Two scrawny little kids and bring them into class. We had a fair number of recently retired pro football players over the years. Shulman was always on, and of course most of his systems came from Junior Institute. But he was always on a pretty decent pricing schedule. So, the last time I knew what his prices were, they were about the same as what my prices were in Denver. And, you know, proportionate terms, that means cost of living in New York is higher than Colorado. But he was, I think it was around $200 a month.
We were the highest.
Yeah. Which, I mean, anybody in here, if you're not far higher than anybody else in your area, you've got to raise your prices.
One of the things last week you helped me out with the pricing that was really, really beneficial when I went back and implemented it, it's really worked well, was the six-month deal where we worked out the pricing on that, where for the initial first introductory phase, we present an option for them to pay it off in 6 months, kind of like you were saying.
Right, accelerated payment.
Accelerated payment and pay it off 6 months. We give them the option, so it's no, it's 189 or it's 340.
Right.
So you basically save $19 a month. But what that mainly is doing is it's getting ready for renewal. And then I prefer it and say, well, you know, most of our students are looked at within the first couple months to see if they're ready for Black Belt Club, see if they're accepted into that. And that's something we can talk about here in a couple months if they're ready. And then if you do have the renewal conference, the difference between they're already used to paying $340 a month, they've had two or three of those payments, and then to step them into renewal,
no big deal.
It's no big deal because, you know, we also offer that for Black Belt Club. So then it goes from 340 to 48 payments of, you know, we're going 4 years, 48 payments of, you know, it's like 440. So it's $100 more to
right.
step into that one. Or if they can't do that, then they'll step down. And so you'll lose $100 more in monthly payments, but then you get 48 months of $250 or whatever your renewal is. And it's been working real well. I ran the numbers where about 20% of the people are choosing that option.
Why would you ever drop their payments?
Well, if they're paying $340 and they renew to Black Belt Club,
yeah,
to two, ours is $250. So they're renewing.
If they're already paying $340, why don't you just give them an option that's $340 for 30 months rather than?
I was too outrageous. I was just trying to keep it simple so I didn't have to.
Yeah, but I would have option one and option two, okay. And option two is the same amount they're paying now. Right, and then the other option is to jump the payment under the same premises. You know,
the other issue with that, if you do that at basic, now they actually prepaid. One person that chose the lower dollar amount is getting a better deal than the other person. I don't know. To me, that
seems
like
wouldn't be because it'd still be an accelerated payment.
No, but he's not giving them credit for the one they pay $189 and the other they pay $340, right?
Nobody ever asks that. That never comes up. Seriously.
I had two people ask me about it.
Oh, I say never. You know, anything less than 5%. It's rounding error, right? But, I mean, we used to do it where if you paid in full or accelerated payment or whatever, the renewal price was the total black belt, and we were taking out everything you've paid. And just stop doing it, and hardly anybody ever asked, right? It just didn't make any difference. And no matter what they do, if you're doing most of the renewals in the first 2 months anyway, right? So if they're doing that kind of accelerated payment, it hasn't made any difference because they, you know, they maybe made
one payment. Yeah, that's true.
Right. See, that was years ago. That was the way I first stumbled into doing the stair steps on the upgrade, you know, because the logic basically used to be the 12-month enrollment at X amount, and then it's a 36-month Black Belt Club, but basically the same price, right? And I started doing it, you're enrolled a second-degree Black Belt, so you pay for 3 years, you get 3 years free. And so they're paying, let's say, $250 a month, but the premise was, you know, you're paying for 3 years, next 3 years are free, really, you know, it's the same as it was. But I was having no problem getting the $250 a month. So then if it changed, if lost that premise, and now it's $250 a month for 6 years, it was just as easy to sell. And then it could be $500 a month for 3 years, 3 years free. And, well, if they can do that, they can do $500. Miko Pellet, he's in Israel now, I think. But we were working with him for a while, and he was in Coronado. But we tripled his prices because basically he was doing the renewal and they pay for a year and the rest of it was free. He said, well, get rid of that premise and just extend it for the whole time. And then the next thing was at that price, you could then have an accelerated option and have it be bigger. But everybody he had, you know, everybody, it's like Jan, what you were talking about with the upgrade. If pretty much everybody you have is able to pay $300 a month, that means they could pay $300 a month for a year or for 3 years or for 5 years or whatever. It doesn't make any difference. If most of them are upgrading to the new thing, well, they could have paid that for the initial tuition, right? That's where I started escalating the leadership tuition. Is what I was finding at doubling the price is still 90% of them were doing the most expensive thing, right? Worst case scenario, even the schools that weren't going very well, is at 75%. Well, my logic was we're going to get about half and half. So if we're getting 90% who are doing this, what does that mean? That price isn't high enough, right? If we push that price higher so that more of them had to fall back to this, everything's better off, right? So again, I mean, sometimes you stumble across those trends when dealing with big enough numbers. There you go, well, almost everybody's able to pay $250 a month, so why am I concerned about what the initial tuition is?
You still haven't gotten the dollar amount high enough with leadership that they're at 50-50, though. Mm-hmm. So that's a key point, too.
Well, my biggest problem is they're independent owner-operators and think independently, and that's a problem. Mm-hmm. So my biggest problem is actually getting them to, you know, to charge that. You know, even Jeff Smith. I mean, I've got him pushing his comfort level pretty dramatically, and he's still, you know, now he's got the new wife, and she wants to have an opinion about it, and she doesn't know anything about mm-hmm. the school. And then
no comment.
Exactly. Greg, is that helping, or do you?
Yeah, I mean, I guess as far as I didn't think about it, not changing their payment. I mean, they still have to pay that 6-month payment off for that rate, and the remaining payments are a little over $250. But you're saying just short term and keep the rate the same.
I would just wipe out the old agreement, and at the least have them pay what they're already paying for the new term. Yeah, just figure out what the term needs to be for that to be what the payment is. And I mean, if they're already paying $340, you could make it $360, right? But keep it right there. You know, I wouldn't give them one option that's up here and then another option that's down here, right? I would give them the option here or the option to keep the payment about the same. And you already know $340 a month is fine with them. So why don't you commit to a longer period of time? And see, the longer commitment is false expectation on our part. Because if you don't pay your payments, what are we going to do? Nothing, right? So any student contract we have is really a one-way commitment. We're committing ourselves to abide by it, and you know, in most cases, they're not committing to anything, right? It's more of a psychological, let's sit down and talk about it, be serious about it, than it is a real, you know, anything.
But we don't tell them that when.
No, that's not.
We don't say, oh yeah, we're not going to do anything if you don't pay. We don't say that from their point of view.
Well, on the, you know, and this goes back to Jan's question too. On the 18%, 10% presentation, is sometimes it sounds like it's so much, especially the ones who are a little more sophisticated. They'll say, well, why on earth would you give that much of a discount, right? I've had a few people say that. My answer is always, well, number one, we're using a billing company. They charge us basically the equivalent of 18% APR anyway. You know, they're rich enough. I just as soon pass it on to you, right? So, and then the additional 10% is, you know, just worth the dust to have it now rather than drug over the next 3 years. I mean, there's time value money. So, you know, then it's a very easy explanation. But a lot of them haven't thought about it that way. They don't think that it's going to cost you money to collect it, right? And it does. I mean, even if you're paying, you know, like the simple billing thing, if you're paying, you know, $35 or $50 a month for software, and it's a 2% merchant discount or something, you know, it still adds up, right? And the time and effort to deal with it. I'd much rather give them a discount and not have to mess with it. And then an easy explanation is, you know, when we were using EFC, I had a picture of Nick and his rolls. You know, well, we're using a billing company. They're rich enough. Here's the owner. I'd rather pass on the savings to you. I told Nick that one time, pissed him off. But I thought it was funny.
He was making the case why you shouldn't have any paid in fulls. And
yeah. It's illegal and unethical for anybody to ever pay you more than 1 month at a time. You should never do that. It's against the law.
Yeah.
Do you know the statistics for how long a person on the average keeps their agreement? So I can, you know, so you can kind of look at where is the bottom line that we break even, like if we give a 20 or 30 or 40% discount. Have you looked at that?
Yes.
Do you know those numbers?
Well, it's all over the board, obviously. Mm-hmm. But I guess the way to think about it on two sides is we talked about before that your dropout rate does plummet dramatically once they're renewed to your highest level program, right? But let's say that your average monthly attrition is 4%, right? Which would be pretty good. Well, that means in a year, half of them are gone. In 2 years, all of them are gone, right? So if it's a three-year deal, you can plan on half of them, you know, again, half of them are going to quit making a payment, you know, within the first year. And then essentially all of them are going to start making their payment within 2 years, right? I mean, and we always look at our student body and we look at things and say, oh, no, I have a bunch of brown and black belts. No. You're still dropping out 4%, but then they just kind of pile up at the top. So that's one way to think about it. For a while there, we did some very complicated statistical analysis and looking at it. And I used to have arguments with ASF and with EFC, you know, about this, and they had pretty good documentation on it. But none of it came back to a better conclusion than if you're dropping out 4% a month, you know, on average, you're not going to collect much over 12 months, right? The EFT world improves that somewhat because somebody can drop out and still make payments for 3 or 4 or 5 months before they get annoyed enough to get it stopped. It is the one pricing dynamic that goes against, you know, my and our philosophical bent in one way, which is the higher the payment, the more they're going to be concerned with stopping to make the payment if they're not using the service, right? So you take the guy in San Antonio and he's got a $35 a month EFT program. Well, I've had memberships at health clubs for $35 a month that ran for 3 years that it did. It was going to be more effort to stop it than to, you know, to just let it keep hitting, right? I had a membership at 24-hour fitness. I think your EFT would be $29 a month. I hadn't been there for 2.5 years.
And that, by the way, is their strategy. I asked one of those when I signed up at a health club because I wanted to use their facility. I said, well, can't I just pay in full? I mean, I'm sophisticated, I think, and I'll just, you know, get a discount. I said, can I just pay in full for the year or 3 years? And he goes, no, we don't allow that. And he really didn't because, and he said, I said, why not? You know, and I told him what business I was in. And he goes, if we charge, it was like 19, their introductory thing. If we charge this, we know you're never going to cancel it. Mm-hmm. So, but it's a different strategy, you know. Yeah. They don't want me to, they really just want to sign me up. I can use a facility if they like, but they know that what the average that people use a health club is like 3 or 4 weeks.
Yeah.
On the average, you know, for all the people that use it for a lot.
Those monthly, for example, when they initially enroll for the program, if they don't pay in full, but later, when situation may change, so if they are enrolled as a monthly payment, a little bit later on can convert to paid in full.
Absolutely.
So,
yeah. But it's just going to be they're going to save less money because they're not saving on the initial payment that they made.
Well, and again, there's different schools of thought on that. But my rule of thumb is I never go after the little balances, right? So, you know, and I consider a little balance, let's say anything under $5,000, right? So if they have a balance under $5,000, I'm not going to put effort in to try to, you know, get it to cash out. But if it's a $10,000, $12,000, $20,000, $30,000 balance, you know, we'll go back to them. Now, I don't want to be like the mass thing, beat them to death all the time so they're afraid to walk in the door. But you know, there are certainly periods of time, right? Tax season. You know, a lot of people are overpaying their taxes all year and they get a refund. So that's a good time to send a letter, send an email, give them a handout, and then sit down and just ask them all one-on-one. And I may still have them. I don't know if you remind me. I used to have three or four different payoff letters. You know, one of them was something to the effect of, and they were all very simple, but one of them was the effect of, we were just reviewing all the accounts, and, you know, I was disappointed to learn that you're paying an extra $3,000 on your tuition, and I just wanted to give you the opportunity to save that $3,000. And on those, we would, you know, we would give them the specifics. You know, you're currently paying X, the balance is X, we'll give you a $3,000 savings if you want to, you know, pay one payment. And I've actually had it where we sent that out, and they just, you know, brought the sheet back with a check.
We had it with a fax thing.
Yeah.
They fax it back. We always get, like, one of those when we do it. But then the other ones are usually one-on-one. But
yeah, you have to talk to them.
You get, occasionally you get one, just sends it back in, like, thank you.
And yeah. It's, yeah. Found money. You know, the problem always is if that's all you do. You send an email, you send a fax. You know, you're going to get the occasional, but you're not going to get much. But, yeah, I mean, really, and again, to avoid beating them to death, what you might do is just pick a cycle when you're going to go through them all, right? You know, and don't have that be the month you're having a bad cash month, because then it'll be like you're beating everybody up all the time. But, you know, but certainly in February or March, I would go through, you know, and try to cash out all the big balances. Maybe again in September might be a good time to do it, you know, back to school and everything settling down. You know, strangely enough, November, December, which is why we came up with the whole renewal bliss thing, but November, December is a good time for people to pay cash. And, you know, I don't have statistical proof, but my logic is they're so busy spending money everywhere they turn that it's easy to get them to spend money in November, December, right? So they're out doing all their retail shopping and everything else. You know, the only caveat to that is you want to get to them early in the season, not late, right? So I don't want to approach them on December 21st. I want to approach them, you know, the first week of November. But once you get the holiday season started, it's another good time. And another good time to get them to renew, another good time to get them to renew and pay in full, another good time to get them to pay off their balance. And, again, it comes back to the other thing we were talking about. You know, if they're upgradable, I would much rather upgrade them and then pay off their balance as part of the upgrade than just go ask them to pay off their balance. And you've got to be really careful, like, not to go ask them to pay off their balance just before you get them to upgrade, right? Because it's like you might get one or the other, but sometimes them doing this screws this one up. So I want to go get the upgrade and pay it off as part of the upgrade, not do one and then try to do the next. Did that answer that question?
Yeah.
But it is something, by the way, that you can do, you know, hit them two or three times by direct mail and then just talk to them all. And it's a very easy conversation. And again, that was Jeff Smith's line is, you know, Ms. Jones, I just want to follow up. You know, would you like to hear about, you know, how to save $5,000 on your program or $2,000 on your program and continue to make monthly payments? You know, and that's his language for if you put it on your credit card, we'll pay him and we'll give you a big discount, right? But would you like to hear how to, you know, save $3,000 and be able to continue to pay your tuition monthly? Well, good. So we have 45 minutes? So what would be the highest priority thing that we could do right now? Eric, what's the one thing that would get you to your 120 a month?
I mean, ours is the sales process, retention process, mail, everything you've been covering. So
yeah,
those all tie together.
Right.
Have you guys implemented a lot of the stuff we did when we were in Houston? Because we had talked about the sales process and how you were doing intros and those kind of things.
Yeah. Yeah, so we've been implementing different ones. We tried parts of it at different locations. You know, one of the things is we'll have to launch it at all at the mall. That's one of the things we want to get out of the way this weekend is unifying that for everyone.
Okay.
Yeah.
Paul, what's your top location doing?
Sorry, say again?
What's your top location doing per month?
Just in more shorts.
Well, overall.
Oh, overall. 138,000.
And where would you like to see that one end up next year?
That one, the only thing that we can really do with that one is increase the martial arts. We'd like to see
you're at capacity for the after school?
We're at capacity for the child care part. We have 228 child care kids there.
That's up. Wasn't that 180 before?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're maxed out.
Okay.
So now the only thing that we can really do with that is to do that to bring the martial arts up.
On the child care side, how much room is there to layer on additional revenue per student?
We are already about 30% higher than anyone else around.
Mm-hmm.
What we just did start doing is that when we renew our kids who are in the child care into the martial arts program, we've been adding on $100 a month fee onto that for like a leadership or we call it peaceful warrior program. But that's been significantly helpful.
Okay, so you have been doing an upgrade for the after school care kid when they're have you added any of the other types of upgrades for you?
Well,
for a while you were doing, what was it, computer skills? Or,
we do computer skills. We do like soccer, some music programs. But our biggest issue is that we don't really have any space
right
to do the programs. I mean, if you consider we have, it's 11,000 square feet for that building. We utilize, 10,800
mm-hmm.
of that space for child care and martial arts. The office space is literally tiny. So that's our biggest issue. If we start taking out child care space, we lose a bunch of revenue.
Oh, sure.
So,
but is there still opportunity in the child care? You know, the example I had shown you was creme de la creme.
Yes.
And arguably their target audience is, $500,000 a year income earners, and you're not in that kind of market.
No.
But is there an opportunity to do, high-intensity Spanish or some other type of thing that could be another $200 a month layer on?
I really believe that where we could really do well would be to do some sort of a program like Kumon.
Yeah.
Something like an actual learning
mm-hmm.
environment or learning help.
Yeah.
Could be very big.
Yeah. No, I really could, and I don't know if you've looked at it, but I mean, Sylvan's pricing, they have 6-week courses that can be $1,500. I mean, they can really leverage it up.
There's no question. We've actually looked at it. We're lacking space to be able to do it. We're looking at a new location that would have 15,000 square feet.
Yeah.
And then I would incorporate that in the
Jan, you missed that number. But question is with Paul's main location, what's it doing now? What's the next threshold we could hit? So let's say the threshold is 200,000 a month.
Yeah, 200,000 a month?
Well, he's doing 138 a month right now.
Yeah.
Okay. And the transport after school care, last time I knew the number, you were at about one, I think it was 186. Mm-hmm. And now it's what, 220 you just said?
228.
228.
What's the income at the after school versus martial arts out of the 130?
Oh, well, the after school is doing about
110
of that.
Yeah. Well, so if we got the, you know, if we got the martial arts program doing what it should be doing, that's 200 right there, right?
Right.
But okay, so so 220 kids is on their transport after school care is translating to 110,000 revenue a month.
Right.
So what's that? 500, about 500 a month each, on average.
That's the average.
Right.
Right.
See, I'm fixated on, you know, like, you know, both my kids have done Spanish since, you know, like preschool. But my son wants to do Mandarin Chinese. Now, he's six. And one of the other first graders is doing Chinese classes for like 4 hours every Sunday, and now he wants to do Chinese, right? And, you know, but I got to tell you, as a parent, something like that, if it was high-intensity immersion second language, you know, I mean, I would be very immune to pride, you know. Almost wouldn't matter what you wanted to charge.
He's doing 4 hours on Sunday?
Chase hasn't yet, but that's his friend.
No, but I mean, that's...
Yeah.
Because you're not open Sunday, are you?
No.
I mean, I know you guys don't want to go in Sunday, but, you know...
Well,
that's a whole other day.
Well, that's right. I mean, there could be some kind of additional tutoring thing that was happening.
So you've already got such a big set of kids, and if you're going to do the elite group of them, if 50 of them did something on Sunday and some other people were teaching them, obviously, then... That potentially could be big.
Now, one of my students, the mom is the Chinese school teacher.
Well, there you go. But I mean, what could be the price point on that? If I'm not the normal customer, but you know, if they told me it's $250 a month and he's going to do, you know, 10 hours a month of second language education, no problem.
Well, and it might be a congruent market with you because you
were doing when with the Spanish before. My daughter was doing tutoring with a gal who was charging her $50 an hour. So we were doing $50 an hour. I think it was 2 hours a week. So
well, I pay $250, $300 for the stand-up comedy class.
Yeah,
and that's
yeah.
2 hours a week.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think $75 a week for 45 minutes of singing lessons for my daughter.
Yeah, yeah.
It's tough to compare some of those things, though. Like singing or artsy things are probably less, you know, you're not going to get a job. It's hard to make the argument you're going to be a CEO of a company.
But the number he came up with was 300 a month for one lesson a week.
Oh, it was 75 a week or 75 a month?
75 a week.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah.
So
then
he's paying $300 a month for singing lessons.
I guess the question would be, how much would you need to make?
And I was paying $100 a week.
Right.
For two sessions a week for language tutoring. Hmm. There's it seems to me that there's another layer that could be of, again, out of 220 kids, if he had 40 that were willing to pay another $200 a month. Well, that's just found money, right? Assuming there wasn't much additional cost, because they're already there anyway. And you got to figure out how to segment that group from this group, but they're, you know, it's not adding to the volume. Well, what would that be? Another 200 for 40 kids?
8,000.
8,000. Yeah, I mean, if you have to pay somebody 1,000 a month to generate another 8,000 revenue, and depending upon how many streams like that you could get going, clearly in that kind of market you could do Sunday. But the thing we know, again, martial arts school is doing 28,000 a month. I mean, they're doing over 100,000 just in martial arts. So if we could get the martial arts side of it to 60, right? Now you're at 170. I mean, that's a pretty good chunk of the way there. And then if we could find something else like the Chinese tutor or something and have a couple of things like that.
I feel like pointing out that a lot of this makes sense for Paul to do these extra things because he's doing the transport after school, and he's got that filled up pretty well. So the place is full. They're very efficient on that side. The inefficiencies in the martial arts and maybe to add other stuff on, for most of us, we shouldn't be. I guess I can just see half the dozen of the people that we've talked to lately say, oh, yeah, let's start Chinese classes on Sunday. And you know.
Well, I think it's a different thing. It's what is the upgrade program in addition to the martial arts when he's got the kids for, what, 15 hours a week probably? So he's got them there 15 hours a week. And so he's already adding $100 a month for, they go from, because martial arts instruction is already part of it. But when they go into his version of leadership, they're already adding $100 a month.
Right, right.
And of course, you're undercharging. So that could add $200. You know, your martial arts program, you're undercharging. You're just charging, what would you say, $145? So you know, there's an opportunity. How many active martial arts students are you at right now?
In that location?
Yeah.
250.
250, not including the after school.
Uh-huh.
250, you're only generating 28,000?
Exactly. He's undercharging. He's got a bunch of old people who are paying ridiculously stupid low mill rates.
Wow.
The upgrade is not aggressive enough.
But I mean, the fundamental issue, though, is you've got the place full, so increasing prices makes sense because as long as you keep marketing, then you're going to, you know, filter out the ones that, I mean, it's a natural thing if you filled your place up.
Yeah.
You're in high demand. You're really valuable.
But again, Paul, on the 250 martial arts students, I mean, really you should be at 50,000 a month plus on that side, right? So that takes you from 138 to 150, all at the same volume.
Well, our attrition rate's only about 2.4%.
On the martial arts side?
Yeah.
So that's good. Yeah.
So
what's the attrition on the after school care, just to piss everybody else off?
About 1%.
Wow.
1% a month?
No, a year.
A year, yeah. Yeah. That's what I was thinking.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
See, I mean, that's the selling point of that business, is the parent needs it. So it's not you're relying on classless fun this week, right? You know, if they're not there, they're going to Children's World or to La Petite or to, you know, to something. But it's not the kid doesn't get to go to after school care.
I have to tell you. Funny story. Just last week, in our Emmaus location, childcare closed. Right now, they're literally three blocks from us.
Yeah.
They closed their doors, and within two days, we took in an extra 30 kids.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, did we have space for 30 kids? Absolutely not. But we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
But the funny thing was that they were charging, the one family.